So that concludes the first night of the Democratic debate. And I have to say, and, you know, this is when we will start our coverage. You know, people who did not watch the debate live will be able to watch or I should say listen or watch the debate after us. If you're listening on the podcast, we're going to play the wrap up of the debate first. But I have to say, and if you had asked me 2.5 hours ago, would I say this? I would say, I'm not sure. Probably not. But I think it's worthwhile for people to listen to the debate, not just because we were pithy at certain points. there was at least, I would say, 35% of the time where Michael was not on his Discord trying to drive a membership to his show.
Oh, no, I would never do that. I was on my Discord.
But I'm honestly, I'm saying, I think this was...
Unfortunately, I made the mistake of noting that Tulsi Gabbard didn't raise her hand, and my mentions, Tulsi people are very touchy about it. You could say, like, Tulsi was wearing a certain color blazer, and they'd be like, you're distorting her position!
It's like the Yang Glang.
Yeah, that's the clang. Yang ID. But that's listen, unfortunate.
But here's the point. The debate that we heard tonight, I think, was really worthwhile for Democrats to hear. Because, first off, I am just broadly struck, and I have to say this, that the party has moved to the left. And I think, you know, Michael made the point when we were talking about this during the actual debate itself that Bill Fletcher, I think it was, has said the party has moved left, and now we need to see the lagging indicator, which, of course, is the leadership, actually make these moves, and they're not going to let go. I mean, a lot of the reasons why they haven't moved left is not, you know, it's hard to parse out how much they don't move left because they think this is a losing prescription, and how much of it is a function of the interests that support them and the places just where they are ideologically. And I would imagine it's a mixture of all of that. I don't know that anybody, you know, as a politician says, I am one, you know, two-fifths. I'm not going to do this because I think we're going to lose if we take this position, and three-fifths because I am, or two-fifths because I'm getting funding from these people, and one-fifth just because I swim in this these waters and I'm too corrupt to really sort of step outside myself and see that. So, I mean, but this is to have... Eight, really, I mean, I think we can legitimately say this. 8 of 10 candidates on this, you know, debate night one basically take positions that are to the left significantly of where the party was, where really any, I mean, I'm thinking Dennis Kucinich, you know, back in 2008, but I don't know. I think... 8 of the 10 candidates on that stage today would be to the left of, at the very least, and I can't recall off the top of my head who ran in 2008. I can remember the top 3 or 4, but really to the left of most of the people running in 2008, which I think is just stunning. Definitely. And this is the B team. Yep. You know, tomorrow night we're going to see... It's possible we could see people who are, I think, a little bit to the right of where we were tonight.
I was going to say that. I mean, because tomorrow night, obviously, you have the leader of, like, this whole thing, which is Sanders. But then, besides that, I mean, Biden... Well,
you have
Biden,
the leader of the opposite poll.
Wave,
of the opposite
but
poll,
you have the leader of the opposite poll. And I think that, you know, to the extent that I know, have any awareness of the sort of various jokers and people like Sawwell that will be up on stage tomorrow night. It is mostly a lot of sort of Russia obsession. And then I guess Andrew Yang will be there. So actually, with the exception of Sanders sort of holding the fort on domestic and foreign policy, it will have a much more right-wing tenor.
It might.
Although, you know, Biden also, I mean, this is the guy who he oscillates between telling billionaires that their lifestyles won't change at all and nothing will be impacted by his policy set, and also saying that he's the most progressive candidate in the race. So we'll see where he goes.
Yeah. All right. Let me just do this spot here.
Yeah, please.
Folks, what fascinates you about true crime? It's huge. My ex-wife used to work in this industry, in the production of True Crime on TV. But we have progressed. Is it the psychology of a killer, or is it simply the thrill of trying to figure out the whodunit? Well, cue Hunt a Killer. It's the murder mystery box that immerses you in an ongoing experience. With every delivery, you will experience what it's like to be a detective. You sift through piles of documents, evidence, and case files until you catch the killer. You build an investigation board with friends, you go online to share theories with other players, or you work through the case by yourself. The choice is all yours. This is like, what was the first season of Homeland? Did you see that?
No.
Where you always have...
Wait, what was the one? Yes.
Is
he a terrorist? They have to like, go through the clue
set. Yes, that
one.
And then there was also another show from Sweden. I can't remember now what it was. There was a blonde guy who was in Hannah, who was the dad in Hannah, and the redhead who was also in Hannah.
Anyways, it's a great game.
Anyways. But no, but my point is this, that it's such a compelling thing to be driven by this.
Right.
And you can... You can sort of immerse yourself in that quality. We're doing that at my home. I get the box every month. Like, I don't let Saul deal with it, but Mila, she has transferred her SVU or whatever it is, the Law and Order.
Oh, Law and Order.
Her Law and Order obsession.
It sounds fun.
It's super fun. And right now, our listeners can go to huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box. They only accept 200 members a day, so hurry up and take advantage of this offer. That's huntakiller.com/majority for 20% off your first box. huntakiller.com/majority. We'll put that, of course, in our podcast, in our YouTube description. All right, so let's get back to the debate here. Tomorrow night, like you say, we have a totally different crew. It's much more... disparate, although I have to say this. As we go through it, tomorrow night you have Marianne Williamson.
Nice.
You have John Hickenlooper. He is going to be of, sort of the Biden lane, right?
Yep.
Andrew Yang, who I think is safely, you can say, on the left lane. From a rhetorical standpoint, I think,
I mean, he doesn't support increasing the minimum wage. So I'm saying this not to be pedantic. I just think it's... It'll be interesting.
I don't think he fits into the boxes.
Yeah, he doesn't fit into any of these boxes
that we have there. And I
not right wing, but
in the context
of
a debate, I think he's going to come off as being to the left.
Yes, he will come off the more human centered concern. So that will be left.
Pete Buttigieg, yes. I think, is going to. It's going to be interesting to see where he lands, because he has, to this point, given himself the sort of flexibility because he's not talking in specifics. So he's giving himself the flexibility of shifting in ways that...
I do think, though, every time he is held to any kind of specific, he breaks right.
I think that's true, but I don't know if that's going to happen in a debate of 10
well,
people
I think
unless
what
he
might
chooses.
Happen if, and I don't know who would do this. I don't think it'll be Sanders because he doesn't need Buttigieg to be out
yet. He shouldn't.
Biden might, and I got to tell you, that footage of him with civil rights activists and community leaders and activists... is really bad.
Well, I think, this is stuff that we should probably save for the preview of tomorrow night's show, of tomorrow night's debate, but Joe Biden is going to go hard in that.
Yes, he
absolutely
is. You
know he's going to go hard because he has a liability in terms of his relationship with the African-American community, and he's going to project himself as a fighter for black people.
And also just a general tough guy, not like, there's a crisis, I'll write a letter, which is what Buttigieg said. I just want to note, in relation to tonight's debate, Warren, no shot at Biden. The only subtext shot at another candidate was de Blasio at Buttigieg when he alluded to Indiana when he was talking about police brutality, which is well done.
Yep. Well, we'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to what happened tonight. Yeah. So you have Biden, you have Sanders tomorrow night, you have Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris will be obviously, I think she's going to position herself on the left. Gillibrand, I think, is also going to position herself on the left. Michael Bennett is going to be on the right.
He'll be on the right.
Swalwell.
Unity.
He is going to be like Buttigieg in the sense that he is going to just talk in ephemeral things.
And he's running on gun reform, too. So being in Miami will help, being next to Parkland.
So, okay. So let's talk about tonight. before the debate tonight, I said that Cory Booker was going to break out. I don't know that there was going to be, there is a breakout. I don't know who that would be, although I think de Blasio may get some of that. But I will say this about Booker. Cory Booker tonight made what seems to me the biggest move that we have seen. You know, obviously the debates are here. We can see it. It's all distilled. Cory Booker decided tonight, or decided prior to tonight, or decided tonight was going to be the night that he sort of makes this decision public, that he was going to run in the same lane as Warren and Sanders, and we'll find out who else is going to join that lane. But I think tonight he basically announced his candidacy for the vice presidency of the United States.
Yeah, I think that's true. I just want to
And I will say this. Let me just add this. He basically signaled, I don't think Joe Biden's going to win.
I agree with that 100%. I just want to say, and this is just a substance point, the fact that he still is not voraciously and intensely critical of Trump on Iran is a reminder. I mean, he's got a bunch of corporate connections with charter schools and pharma that he's going to need to run away from if he wants to rebrand
which
himself
he did,
as a progressive,
to a certain
which he did.
Tonight.
He absolutely did. But he certainly didn't run from AIPAC in a far extreme right position on the Middle East. And, you know, I actually think, I mean, obviously in general, I'll always put the plug in for more focus on foreign policy. It really does matter. But the Iran one and averting war with Iran, that's one that I'm going to just also argue objectively that you don't need to sort of make the like, hey, guys, you should care about the rest of the world case. That's a major thing. That if that actually pops off, that will be the greatest catastrophe we're dealing with. And it's really disturbing that he hasn't had a commensurate catch up on that area.
Yeah. And but keep this in mind. From his perspective, if his agenda is to become, I mean, there's so many stories around Cory Booker tonight.
Right.
And this is not a function of Cory Booker. I have been a longtime critic of Cory Booker's.
But he's smart. He reads the room.
He's smart. He reads the room. And for Bernie Sanders or for Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker is a good choice. And he's a good choice tonight because he basically said, there's nothing you're going to be espousing that you're going to have to say, but what about your vice presidential candidate?
I agree 100%.
And to the extent 100%. That he sort of like tiptoes through that, the Iran thing, that is going to be helpful for whomever is his, whoever is the president.
For getting the seniors
now,
out in Florida.
I will say this, that if I was advising Cory Booker, and I would say, And look, this is a cynical perspective. I get this, all right? Because it could be that Cory Booker actually, you know, is more simpatico with Warren and Sanders in terms of broadly speaking. And I think that's quite possible. It's quite possible. But I don't know. But if
I
was...
say I doubt it.
Well, yes. But it,
whatever,
the final analysis,
it doesn't matter. Yeah.
But if I was advising Booker, I would say, look, if Joe Biden is the president, you know, gets the nomination, he's got to pick Kamala Harris,
right?
Or he's got to pick someone with that type of profile. He's got to pick a woman. He should pick a woman of color, just because the Democratic Party relies on women of color to. And frankly, Joe, you have a problem with women, and you have a problem with black people, in terms of like why they should be a little suspect of you. And so if I'm advising Cory Booker, I'm saying to him, like, look, you can bet on Joe Biden, but even if he wins, you still lose.
Right.
But
Sanders
they clearly think that Joe Biden's going down.
And, no, I think
and
I agree.
That, to me, is fascinating.
I think that's your.
It's going
to
be interesting
right.
to see if that gets picked up because what we're watching with 20 candidates are people, and it's different in the Republican Party. You could look at 6 or 7 or 8 of those people and just say like what they're going to be doing. You know, if we were in June of 2016 or 2015, I should say, and you could look at 5 or 6 of those people and say, I know exactly what they're going to be doing. They're going to be doing, you know, World Net Daily. They're going to be doing a radio show. They're going to be selling books. They can go on the left does not have that same type of circuit.
Right.
There may be room for one or two people, a little bit of that.
There's a couple people. I mean, Buttigieg's MSNBC and future campaigns.
Well, yeah, but no, he's got a future in politics. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Cory Booker is making a very important decision in his mind. And it's going to be interesting if that picks up, because if that narrative picks up in the media, that the people in the race think that Biden's going to fall.
No, I think
that's going to make his fall more precipitous.
I agree. I mean, the reason though that I do think, like, I think that might be the most important takeaway. The reason I think de Blasio won tonight is first because,
without doubt,
he did mostly a really good job. And again, I say that as somebody who's,
there was fiercely, nobody in this office.
No,
has more problems with de Blasio than you.
And I think that when you look at the real estate policy, there's serious problems with de Blasio. And some of those problems, by the way, in my view, and this is just my politics, actually show, even in his successes, some of the limits of even actually delivering liberalism, because they haven't, you know, there is structural inequalities that you need to go deeper to deal with. But that being said, when you combine the fact that, A, he just objectively performed well, and I agree, everybody said, look, I agree, I think the Rush answer was stupid, ridiculous, but I don't think it undermines him. And when you combine just objective good performance with, this is a guy whose main media coverage is literally people like me and articles saying, why are you doing this? This is embarrassing. And he came out and gave the strongest performance of anybody on that stage, and strongly articulated exactly the current that Cory Booker's reading on better than anybody on that stage. Pound for pound, no one did better for themselves tonight than Bill de Blasio. No one shifted more perceptions. And I think the second person, and the person the media might focus on, even though I don't think he was particularly great, was Julian Castro did himself a bit of good. Beto O'Rourke is done.
Beto O'Rourke is done.
Stick a fork in him.
And because, you know, the promise of Beto O'Rourke was his charisma.
Right.
And I have to say, now maybe I'm projecting a little bit, but in the first 30 seconds of this debate, it looked like he was nervous.
He was.
He looked like the guy on the way to the fraternity formal who drank too much before getting on the bus.
Honestly. Yes. I mean, he looked scared. Sick. And I, you know, I am not projecting bad things on Beto inclined. I don't know how to say that more concisely, but as they were just passing over, I was like, is he okay? Does he have the flu? He looked like a guy like, you know, they're it's the Final Four. And, you know, some team from, you know, maybe like a Division II team or something like that, or Division I, that is not supposed to be in the Final Four. And they all got the stomach flu. And it looked like he had the stomach flu in those first minutes. And it turned out, I think, was that he was nervous about coming out so hard with doing the Spanish. And look, I think it's great. I think if every single one of our candidates could speak Spanish, I think that would be awesome. But he shoved a round peg into a square hole. He didn't answer the question that he was asked, and he should have waited. There would have been an opportunity.
And I think the big problem with him, just to say, I think it's when you see somebody who it's like, and this is another major, I mean, there's obviously comparing him to Obama is ridiculous, but people were doing that a couple of months ago.
Right.
And, you know, Obama, and again, totally separate of politics and policy, but like Obama was somebody that there would be constantly people saying like, hey, look, he's this young, charismatic guy. He doesn't have much experience. He's getting a free ride. He's getting a lot of good media. As soon as he faces some pushback from the Clinton campaign or the press turns on him, watch him wilt. And one of the things I remember this in that campaign, even though I wasn't doing this professionally, obviously, he never
wilted.
Ever. You just saw each wave was like, oh, Obama's not messing around. He could do this. Beto O'Rourke has had basically after a honeymoon, a couple of weeks of not even bad, just mediocre press. And it's clearly already in his head.
Here's the problem. And I think it builds on your point that you're making. And we saw it in the context of Castro questioning Beto on the provision, I don't know exactly what it was, 1325 or whatever it is, that criminalizes crossing over the border when it used to be a civil infraction. The criminalization of crossing over the border allows the Department of Homeland Security, the Border Patrol people, to separate parents from their children, because in the context of a parent who has committed a crime as opposed to a civil infraction, you can, under the Flores Agreement, separate them. Okay. The problem that Beto has, that Obama didn't have, and that I think it came out today, is that Beto seems to have not committed to this.
Right.
And by that I mean that he seems to want to maintain his viability in Texas. And those things are in conflict in the modern day Democratic Party, because the party has moved to the left enough on enough issues that to be a local candidate in Texas, at least in Beto's mind, you can't compete on the national level. And that came up there. And I think there are other things that maybe we're not just sensitive to because we're not from Texas.
Although the odd thing about it, that's totally true. And part of this is obviously strategic calculation that he made early on to basically run in the center right of the party, is that I think you're right on things like immigration issues. And that's a major strike against him just in terms of his sense of politics and geography. But there's other areas, like when he was running against Cruz, there was definitely a period of time where he discoursed, at least, that he supported Medicare for all. And he reversed himself on that when he got into the primary. So the other thing that I'm a little confused about is that it seemed to me there were actually areas where he tracked, at least on some economic and healthcare issues, further to the left when he was running for Senate, and then has actually moved, like he assumed to be in the right lane when he was running for president.
I mean, it could be. I mean, I think that he may have felt certain latitude on certain, like, sort of rhetorical things in the context of just running for Senate as opposed to the presidency, that there is some assessment that when you say X as a Senate candidate, the weight that's given to X is less than it is if you say it as a presidential candidate. But what fascinates me is that here's a guy who's driving with the brakes on.
Yes, definitely.
And I can tell you, when you're driving with the brakes on, you do one of two things. You either drive with the brakes off or you put the brakes on.
Yes.
You don't drive with the brakes on.
Right.
You do one or the other. And both can be valid choices. But you got to make a choice. The time when people get hit by a car when they cross the street is when they hesitate.
Yep.
You either run across the street or you don't cross the street. But if you like hesitate in the middle and debate, you're going to get hit.
Right.
And I think that's where Beto was tonight. Yeah. I think he got hit.
No, it was a terrible night for him. And he's the only person that had like a loss tonight.
I think that's right.
Yes.
And I will say this. I would be not shocked if on July 4th, maybe July 3rd, he announces, I'm out of here. You know what? Like, here's the thing.
He's killing his career.
Someone has to step in and say to him,
he's killing it.
You're driving with the brakes on.
Yeah.
And you got two choices. You either take the brakes off or you put the brakes on. But the longer he does this, all he's going to do is burn out those brake pads. And then you're going to have no brakes. And then if you're driving in a windy, area.
Really committed to this.
If you're driving in a windy area and all of a sudden you realize you have no brakes. And what if there's a flash, like, I don't know, rainstorm? Or maybe you're driving up in the mountains in the Sierra Nevadas and it starts getting, and it gets cold and it gets icy and then you don't have brakes and you're in big trouble. That's all I'm saying.
I think you're right.
He's heading towards a cul-de-sac at some
point. I mean, and I just
a cul-de-sac would be...
That's Beto. Exactly. I just want to do two. I think, you know, Inslee deserves an honorable mention for climate. Yeah. I appreciate, I think Gabbard deserves an honorable mention for the basic broad point about anti-war and holding Ryan in check. She came to life when Ryan was doing his nonsense about Afghanistan. Klobuchar and Delaney should not be there. It's ridiculous.
No. I mean, I think John Delaney is interesting. Insofar
like psychologically, as a William H. Macy character.
I actually think from I want to say as a media Well, no, as digesting the media, and also in terms of like, hey, this is a reminder how bad it can get.
Yeah, totally.
Right. I think it's pretty good. It's interesting to sort of say like, here are the boundaries of where people, and I think that's helpful. Klobuchar, I agree with you. She seems completely lost. Like even her 3 points at the end where she gave her wrap up, when you have to say, I'm not promising what everybody's promising on this stage, but you can trust me to fight for you. Like it's the FDR.
It's that beautiful. We played it the other night. We played it on MR too. It's that beautiful, that incredible FDR footage that Bernie's account tweeted back at Hickenlooper. It's the, I support exactly what you support. I love Social Security. Put me in charge of it and I'll fund it. But it won't cost anything.
Right.
But she's not even being that.
That's no. The thing is that like there's she's actually no less ambitious than that.
Yes.
It's like,
right, right.
I support everything that you're doing. Put me in charge. I'll fund it 3/4 of the way and it won't cost anything. I mean, that's basically her message.
Right.
And like she could barely get through the 3 things that she was offering. I feel it was like 2.6.
I'll let you know which were the 3 points she was making.
I also just have to say, two and three
seemed almost identical, which was like I have no plans to do what everybody else is going to do. But believe me, if you need me, I'll be there.
Fun fact about John Delaney, our new friend, from a deep blue district in Maryland, the 6th district, in 2014, his second election. He went up against our friend Dan Bongino, won by only 1%.
Oh my God. Wow.
That is really?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
If he was
in any way a threat, that people would bring that up, but nobody's going
to
care.
Can I just say really quickly, too, the other thing that I wanted to say about Klobuchar is she's a great example of like, when people always make, and they did say this about Jeb Bush, like he was governor in Florida. Like winning statewide races in places like Minnesota, no disrespect, but like this big argument that I've won all my races means nothing in the context of a national campaign. It might if you have actual like campaign talent. But the idea that part of her selling point is like, I'm a Midwest winner, I think we can put that to bed.
Yeah. And lastly, let's talk about Warren. I think that Warren helped herself, but not as much as one would have anticipated tonight, or could have anticipated. I think it's a net positive for her, but I don't walk away thinking she dominated this debate. But I think part of that is a function of a lot of people have come to basically align with her positions. I think, you know, it's a path towards Bernie's, but a lot of them have landed around her essentially.
Except on the one, and we'll guess we'll get to this Jonathan Chait nonsense in a second, but I was struck that she's still following Bernie because she has clarified her position on Medicare for All, which she hasn't before. And she started to pivot to the movement argument, which, when you start getting to the movement argument, I mean, look, obviously I'm a Sanders supporter, but I really think I can see on a lot of domestic policy areas. I disagree, but I can see the arguments. I think it's going to be very hard for any other candidate if they start resting their argument on there's a movement behind me to compete in that terrain with Sanders. There's no comparable
thing. All right,
thing.
Let me just say this. We'll talk about this tomorrow.
Besides that, I think she did well, and she certainly didn't harm herself, and she's already in a good position. So if you're in a good position, you don't harm yourself, and that has to be some sort
right.
of win.
Right, and I think she introduced herself to more people. I mean, I think net positive for Warren, without a doubt, and no downside. Here is, and I agree with you, And I've been, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit on the show, that Bernie Sanders' argument tomorrow night is going to be not just only do I have the policies, but I have the plan to implement the policies. But here's the problem. From the perspective of the voters, Bernie is not going to go away.
Right.
Like, so let me just posit this. If I'm a voter, I can say, I can elect Warren. And I get Bernie too. Well, because Bernie's not going to go away.
That's totally true.
And if Elizabeth Warren is going to pursue 70% of the policies that Bernie Sanders is, I know Bernie is going to go to the Senate. And he's going to keep that organization that he has. And he's going to keep that email that he's been using to
warn people about ICE raids.
To warn people about ICE raids.
Support abortion work.
Support abortion work. To help labor. I mean, he's been
incredible work.
While he's been running for president, almost like his day job, has been creating an organization to mobilize people across the spectrum in a series of issues that has gotten very little attention from anybody, for that matter.
Right.
And if I'm a voter at one point, I may say, like, this is a twofer. If I elect Elizabeth Warren president, I get Bernie Sanders in the Senate basically forcing Elizabeth Warren and giving Elizabeth Warren the only currency that she could possibly find anywhere to pursue certain policies.
Well, I mean, I still think, you know, look, I think the sort of genuine and we can pick that apart some other time. And I still think the case in that way.
Well, we should talk about this tomorrow night.
Yeah, we'll talk about it tomorrow night. But I just want to add briefly, I think I would like to see, not just as a campaign strategy, I would like to see, following actually Bill Fletcher Jr. again, Warren start to adopt that lead from Sanders as well, and people who have a progressive commitment start to actually think, how can these campaigns actually be launching points to training activists and empowering grassroots activists? Because that is going to be essential in the good scenarios, not to mention a Biden scenario and, God forbid, a Trump scenario.
Well, all right. So here's the deal, folks. And just, I would say the final assessment is, I don't know if it's, makes sense to say that progressives won tonight, but tonight showed that progressives are winning. Mm-hmm. And so progressives won tonight, but it was not a fair fight. I mean, it was, you know,
you can't go up against de Blasio and he's unleashed.
Jesus.
You can't deal with that.
And I will say this. Let me just say
now
one more thing.
Now we
can
all see what is. I can't believe
I
on your name.
I don't understand.
The First Lady of NYC.
I feel like it's a pathology.
Yes.
But the idea that he doesn't sit and, like, just entice the entire country with the idea of universal pre-K. I mean, maybe it's different in New York, but I've had two kids now go through pre-K.
Yep.
And the expense was enormous.
Yep.
And I don't know if I'm in the top 10% of income in the country. I mean, I live in New York. I mean, I would imagine I've got to be. And for me, it was like, we've got to do planning. And like the day I like became conscious of like, that's my last payment for pre-K was extraordinary. Now,
huge Bill de Blasio accomplishment, like national accomplishment.
Now,
and I say that as a big credit.
Let me just like, for the vast majority of parents,
yes,
the decision isn't the experience is not relief at not having to pay this anymore, this expense, which like literally becomes like, okay, now I can start saving for his college.
Right.
Like, I can take that money, I can start saving for his college. But for the vast majority of parents in New York City, it gave them the opportunity to have their kids be in a classroom with trained professionals who are going to introduce them to concepts, to words, to things like this that most parents don't have the ability or capacity, really, I should say, because they've got to work full time, because they don't have the money to pay for, a nanny or to send them to a private preschool. Because there's a big difference between daycare and preschool, folks. Big difference in terms of the training of the people who are watching the kids, in terms of the way that they perceive what they're supposed to be doing with the kids and the way they engage with the kids, what the kids get out of it. But there is so much data that shows. They did a study, I mean, we talked about this briefly, that 50-year-olds, when they were 50, kids who got pre-K when they were 50, their health was better.
Yep.
Their job prospects were better. Their incomes were better. Their happiness levels were better. I mean, just across the board.
Yep.
And to make that accessible to all New Yorkers, biggest city in the country, or the second, or whatever it is.
No, it is. Definitely the biggest city in the country.
To make that accessible to all New Yorkers. It's just an astonishing feat. And one that I think, like, with 2 minutes dedicated to that, can make the rest of the country. But it indicates to me that he is, again, running for a position in the Sanders-Warren administration, whatever that ends up being.
Well, I mean, to Bill de Blasio, it's such a great night.
Also
I just need to note a text. I just got a text from Sean saying that now apparently, and good plug, the Antifada is team Bill de Blasio now as well.
Is that right?
So an incredible fucking night by Bill de Blasio.
That's because Beto.
Like, that's just amazing.
That's just because Beto was so limp that, that Jamie has left the building.
Of Bill de Blasio, Mr. Sandinista. That's why I voted for him the first time. In 2013, anybody who said inequality was a crisis, and then you do 80s Sandinista work on top, of course I'm going to vote for him. I do want to say just really briefly, I mean, I think props to Jay Inslee. It's great that he's doing it, but this is just a blunt assessment. He seems like a nice guy and a good governor and whatever, but like, I really hope Sanders will start centering this in the same way because we need a candidate with a certain degree of charisma to talk about climate.
I thought Inslee did himself a lot of favor.
He totally did.
And
I'm going
to say
like
that
see,
I've also maybe, gotten word that the only 16-year-old that I'm aware of that watched the debate went for Booker.
Wow. Well, Booker's a nice guy. Booker's a very nice. We were talking about this the other night, that Booker just has a certain. I mean, if you did the boss test, Booker would win it. Who would you most prefer to deal with on a daily basis?
I thought Booker tonight came off as a lot less saccharine as he usually does.
That's right.
All right. Well, look, we're out of time. Tomorrow night, we're going to be doing coverage. We're not going to have a live show during the day tomorrow.
Viva de Blasio.
We're going to have a live show tomorrow night. It is going to be off the hook.
Basically, we're going to make fun of Biden a lot. I really hope Biden.
Listen, it's going to be
listen,
so good.
Here's the deal.
Yeah. Here's the deal. Here's what
here's
we're going to do.
Here's the deal.
The rats, the hyenas,
because
start to
tonight,
eat each other.
Tonight, my understanding is we topped Pod Save America. We topped all the other shows, too. But Pod Save America,
yeah,
obviously.
Don't worry about the other
highest
shows.
Show on YouTube history.
The highest show on YouTube history.
Pod Save America, obviously, has literally millions of dollars.
They said that they didn't want to be number one, but nobody believes that.
But you have a choice tomorrow night. You can watch Pod Save America, where they're going to be respectful of Joe Biden. Or you can watch this program. Well, we're going to be respectful to the format, but we're going to shit all over Joe Biden.
Yes.
All right? I mean, that's
correct.
Just the bottom line.
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Hey, you know the deal. Let me pull your coat, daddy-o. Barack Obama was my number one homie, all right?
There you go. All right, folks. See you tomorrow.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Wednesday, June 26th. And our special coverage of the 2020 Democratic primary kicks off with the live debate, live from Miami, where it is live, a debate. The first debate of two of the Democrats in 2020, the live debate tonight from Miami, Florida. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is the famous live debate coverage of the Majority Report. This time it is emanating from Florida. We all flew down there. We are sitting in a room somewhere in the same hall where the debate is taking place. We can't hear it except for it pumped into the room that we're in. And so we'll be watching it on TV just like you. That's actually not true. But if we were,
fake news.
I can tell you, I've done multiple debates last cycle, right? I did one between Trump and Clinton, and I did the Vegas one of the Democrats. We will do that as well, and if it falls this year, but I can tell you that basically what I did is sat in a room and watched it on TV with a bunch of other reporters. Right. So it was interesting insofar as you watching the other reporters and seeing how they're reacting.
How they create their sort of narrative.
Exactly. And it is identical to the way that television execs absorb a table read or an audition. They sort of look to their left and their right and assess what the other people think, and then they think that. And so you can actually, it's sort of interesting because it's like dominoes. They all tilt their heads to their left and their right. And if you just do like a, one of these, like you're not trying to influence them, but you're just like, whoa, that can literally change the media narrative.
Well, the only thing I'll say here, and I know we'll probably be mostly quiet because this will not be as fun as a Republican debate.
No.
But the only thing, I mean, Warren is by far the most important person here tonight. So she could stumble and that would be a story. And then what is definitely going to happen is there's going to be one person that we were talking about that they're going to say had a breakthrough. And this is a person who has nobody's interested in, but they had a great night. And you were saying Cory Booker. I think Cory Booker is probably that person. But I think it could be Beto O'Rourke.
I think
go for a second serving of Beto.
I think it's going to be hard to let's just listen to the audio. Just a reminder tonight. Tonight, Mayor Bill de Blasio on the stage. Representative Tim Ryan of Ohio is on the stage. Former Obama HUD Secretary Julian Castro of Texas. His brother, of course, is a congressman from Texas. Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey. Senator Elizabeth Warren, Massachusetts. Former Representative Beto O'Rourke of Texas. Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota. Representative Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii. Governor Jay Inslee of Washington State. Former Representative John Delaney of Maryland. Now, I can tell you something of every single one of these people except for John Delaney. I could give an S, and he's just some business dude who used to be a congressman who's getting up there to basically say, like, Howard Schultz doesn't have nearly the governmental experience that I have.
He's the mouthpiece of corporate America. He's someone, I mean, it's very awkward. I mean, he's made a lot of money and he's a congressman, and he's going to be most known in his whole life for getting booed at the California Democratic Convention. That is
who knows? Maybe he'll get booed here.
Yeah, it's also possible. Jay Inslee will get a couple of nice pieces written about him, I predict, after this debate.
Well, he should.
And you know, that's what I'm going to say, deservedly so. He just put a very aggressive climate change proposal on the table. And if anybody, him and Gravel, who aren't on the stage, but those are the two sort of single issue candidates, one on green and climate, other on imperialism, that I think deserve some props.
The big question I have tonight is, whether, and I imagine she's going to do this once or twice, Elizabeth Warren goes after Joe Biden once or twice, there's going to be an opportunity where she's going to talk about the 2008 financial crisis. She's going to talk about the housing situation. And she's going to have the opportunity to say, that's one of the things that I disagree with about with Joe Biden. And she's going to dump that on him.
She'll get at least one shot in. She needs to. And it'll be fun.
It'll be fun. Yeah. I don't think that you're going to see anybody go after anybody in this debate.
I don't know how aggressive it will be, but I think Tulsi Gabbard will. I think she might go after Warren on some foreign policy and intervention stuff. I think that's possible.
John Delaney will say, we can't be socialists. So there'll be a lot
of Klobuchar.
And yeah, yes. In fact, I imagine now, like, there's going to be Klobuchar. There may be maybe one or two others that say that. They're going to take like some type of sideswipe at Bernie. Remember, a lot of these people, what they're doing right now is they're placing a bet on one or two people to win. And they're trying to get into their cabinet. That's what most of these people are doing on stage. Right. Although Delaney's probably also trying to, just stroke his ego.
I think his buddies are like, all right, man, you've done enough for the healthcare industry.
Right.
We'll fund your delusion for a couple of months.
Exactly. So that's basically what we're looking at here.
Howard Schultz is taking a break, right? He threw his back out. Oh yeah, advocating he had
multiple back
strategy.
Okay, oh, here we go. Let's do this. A lot of guys in blue suits.
The candidates will have 60 seconds to answer and 30 seconds for any follow-ups.
Because of this, Beto looks like he's about to have a heart attack. Will be able to
comment on born for this.
Tulsi looks poised. Of the next
2 hours, looks is that Delaney closest to us?
Yeah, of course.
What a weirdo.
Yeah. Delaney looks like a total
keep
weirdo.
The reactions to a minimum. We are not going to be shy about making sure the candidates stick to time tonight.
Ah!
Because there's way too many of them.
Yeah, and we'll start this evening with Senator Elizabeth Warren. Senator, good evening to you.
Thank you.
You have many plans, free college, free childcare, government health care, cancellation of student debt, new taxes, new regulations, the breakup of major corporations. Mm-hmm. But this comes at a time when 71% of Americans say the economy is doing well, including 60% of Democrats. What do you say to those who worry this kind of significant change could be risky to the economy?
So I think of it this way. Who is this economy really working for? It's doing great for a thinner and thinner slice at the top. It's doing great for giant drug companies. It's just not doing great for people who are trying to get a prescription filled. It's doing great for people who want to invest in private prisons, just not for the African Americans and Latinx whose families are torn apart, whose lives are destroyed, and whose communities are ruined. It's doing great for giant oil companies that want to drill everywhere, just not for the rest of us who are watching climate change bear down upon us. When you've got a government, when you've got an economy that does great for those with money and isn't doing great for everyone else, that is corruption, pure and simple, we need to call it out, we need to attack it head on, and we need to make structural change in our government, in our economy, and in our country.
Senator Klobuchar, you've called programs like Free College something you might do if you were, quote, a magic genie. To be blunt, are the government programs and benefits that some of your rivals
I'm a non-magic genie. That's my fucking staff.
Giving your voters, people, a false sense of what's actually achievable?
Well, first, the economy. We know that not everyone is sharing in this prosperity. And Donald Trump just sits in the White House and gloats about what's going on when you have so many people that are having trouble affording college and having trouble affording their premiums. So I do get concerned about paying for college for rich kids. I do. But I think my plan is a good one. And my plan would be to, first of all, make community college free. And make sure that everyone else besides that top percentile gets help with their education. My own dad and my sister got their first degrees with community college. There's many paths to success, as well as certifications. Secondly, I'd use Pell Grants. I'd double them from $6,000 to $12,000 a year and expand it to the number of families that get covered, to families that make up to $100,000. And then the third thing I would do is make it easier for students to pay off their student loans. Because I can tell you this, if billionaires
yeah,
can pay off their yachts, students should be able to pay off their student loans.
That's time. Thank you.
She's so
Congressman O'Rourke,
can't get
what we've just
going.
Been discussing and talking about is how much he fundamental change to the economy is desirable and how much is actually doable. In that vein, some Democrats want a marginal individual tax rate of 70% on the very highest earners, those making more than $10 million a year. Would you support that? And if not, what would your top individual rate be?
Can you repeat the question?
This economy has got to work for everyone. And right now we know that it isn't. And it's going to take all of us coming together to make sure that it does. Necesitamos incluir cada persona en el éxito de esta economía. Pero si queremos hacer eso, necesitamos
what's
incluir
Spanish
cada
for
persona
run for Senate,
en
asshole?
Democracia. Cada votar, cada votante necesitamos
look at Cory Booker, he's trying to like,
y cada voz
how am I going to refute this?
Escuchar. Right now we have a system that favors those who can pay for access and outcomes. That's how you explain an economy that is rigged to corporations and to the very wealthiest. A $2 trillion tax cut that favored corporations while they were sitting on record piles of cash and the very wealthiest in this country at a time
now,
of
here's
historic
the question.
Wealth inequality.
Does
a
Beto
democracy that is revived because we returned power to the people. No PACs, no gerrymandering, automatic and same-day voter registration to bring in more voters, and a new Voting Rights Act to get rid of the barriers that are in place now. That's how we each have
you
a voice in our
You didn't answer my question.
And make this economy work for everybody.
That's time, sir.
Ben Daho.
Yeah, wait a second.
Sir, if you want to answer the direct question, would you support a 70% individual marginal tax rate? Yes, no, or pass?
I would support a tax rate and a tax code that is fair to everyone. Tax capital
70%.
At the same rate that you tax ordinary income. Take that corporate tax rate up to 28%.
Posado.
You would generate
Posado.
The revenues you need to pay for the programs we're talking about.
That's fine. Thank you.
Beto is
you know,
not
here's
good.
The thing, though. Is he going to do that now every question? Like, he couldn't have the patience
Senator
to wait.
Warren in particular put out a plan
Kamala Harris doesn't
he's
answer the
do
questions
that.
In English. I don't. It's Spanish.
He said we should not, quote,
he's
got to
do that in every question now,
though. And breaking
seems...
them up without any kind of process. Why do you disagree?
I don't think I disagree. I think we have a serious problem in our country with corporate consolidation. And you see the evidence of that in how dignity is being stripped from labor. And we have people that work full-time jobs and still can't make a living
Corey.
Wage. We see that
Turn
because consumer
left.
Prices are being raised by pharmaceutical companies that often have monopolistic holds on drugs. And you see that by just the fact that this is actually an economy that's hurting small businesses and not allowing them to compete. One of the most aggressive bills in the Senate to deal with corporate consolidation is mine about corporate consolidation in the ag sector. So I feel very strongly about the need to check the
night.
Corporate consolidation and let the free market work. And I'll tell you
and
this.
Now watch that he's going to go,
I
need
the
bear of
reeds. Brown community. I see
he's going to start speaking Hebrew.
That this economy is not working for average Americans. The indicators that are being used from GDP to Wall Street's rankings is not helping people in my community. It is about time that we have an economy that works for everybody, not just the wealthiest in our nation.
But quickly, Senator Booker, you did say that you didn't think it was right to name names, to name companies and single them out, as Senator Warren has briefly. Why is that?
Well, again, I will single out companies like Halliburton or Amazon that pay nothing in taxes and our need to change that. And when it comes to antitrust law, what I will do is, number one, appoint judges that will enforce it. Number two, have a DOJ and a Federal Trade Commission that will go through the processes necessary to check this kind of corporate concentration. At the end of the day, we have too much of a problem with corporate power growing. We see that with everything from Citizens United and the way they're trying to influence Washington. It's about time that we have a president that fights for the people in this country
that's time,
who
sir.
Need to have someone that's a
he
champion
switched
for them.
Lanes.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Warren,
he
I
is now running
you.
Against Bernie and Warren
Are
as opposed to Biden.
So the way I understand this is there is way too much consolidation now in giant industries in this country. That hurts workers, it hurts small businesses, it hurts independent farmers, it hurts our economy overall, and it helps constrict real innovation and growth in this economy. Now look, we've had the laws out there for a long time to be able to fight back. What's been missing is courage. Courage in Washington to take on the giants. That's part of the corruption in this system. It has been far too long that the monopolies have been making the campaign contributions, have been funding the super PACs, have been out there making sure that their influence is heard and felt in every single decision that gets made in Washington. Where I want to start this is I want to return government to the people, and that means calling out the names of the monopolies and saying, I have the courage to go after them.
Thank you.
But it's not about courage. It's about power.
I mean,
I just don't like that
for me. The next question is for you. Democrats have been talking about the pay gap for decades.
You don't really
you
need much
to
other than a disposition at this point
in this
to exercise
Thank
those
you very
laws.
Thank for that question, Lester. You know, I grew up
that has not been why we've not
with
had
a
those
mother
laws,
who raised my brother Joaquin and me as a single
moral
parent.
Failing of
and I know what it's like to struggle.
Campaign
I know
contributions,
like,
ideology changes, and things like that.
To rent a home and to worry about whether you're going to be able to pay the rent at the first of the month. And to see a mom work very, very hard and know that moms across this country are getting paid less simply because they're women. I would do several things, starting with something we should have done a long time ago, which is to pass the Equal Rights Amendment finally in this country.
and also pursue legislation
so, talk
so
about
that
his grandma?
Women are paid equal pay for equal
Sooner
work
later.
In this country. It's past time that we did that. And, you know, we have to do this. If we want to be the most prosperous nation in the 21st century,
I've never
we need to
him.
Make sure that women are paid what they deserve.
I don't know. I can't remember it was him or his brother that spoke at the DNC a while back.
First of all, let's recognize the situation we're in, that the American people deserve a president who will put your interests ahead of the rich and powerful. That's not what we have right now. I enlisted in the Army National Guard after the Al-Qaeda terror attacks on 9/11, so I could go after those who had attacked us on that day. I still serve as a major. Served over 16 years, deployed twice to the Middle East, and in Congress serve on the Foreign Affairs and Armed Services Committees for
Good
over
morning,
6 years.
Patriots!
I know the importance of our national security, as well as the terribly high cost of war. And for too long, our leaders have failed us, taking us from one regime change war to the next, leading us into a new Cold War and arms race, costing us trillions of our hard-earned taxpayer dollars and countless lives. This insanity must end. As president, I will take your hard-earned taxpayer dollars and instead invest those dollars into serving your needs. Things like health care, a green economy, good-paying jobs, protecting our environment, and so much more.
Mayor de Blasio, good evening. You're the mayor of the biggest city in the United States, but it's also one of the cities in the country
called the Mayor de Blasio.
With the greatest de Blasio. Gap between the wealthy and the poor. How would you address income inequality?
Well, we've been addressing income inequality in New York City by raising wages, by raising benefits, by putting money back in the hands of working people. $15 minimum wage, paid sick days, pre-K for all, things that are making a huge difference in working people's lives. But let me tell you, what we're hearing here already in the first round of questions is that battle for the heart and soul of our party. I want to make it clear. This is supposed to be the party of working people. Yes, we're supposed to be for 70% tax rate on the wealthy. Yes, we're supposed to be for free college, free public college for our young people. We are supposed to break up big corporations when they're not serving our democracy. This Democratic Party has to be strong and bold and progressive. And in New York, we've proven that we can do something very different. We can put money back in the hands of working people. And let me tell you, every time you talk about investing in people and their communities, you hear folks say there's not enough money. What I say to them every single time is there's plenty of money in this world. There's plenty of money in this country. It's just in the wrong hands.
Good for de Blasio.
Great. That's actually the strongest communication I've ever seen Bill de Blasio give.
I like him.
I'm not kidding. That was strong.
Wait a second. Now the anti-de Blasio.
Here we go.
This is the issue that all of us...
Oh, no.
He's so bad.
On the campaign trail. We need to make sure everyone has a living wage. And I've called for a doubling of the earned income tax credit, raising the minimum wage, and creating paid family leave. That will create a situation where people actually have a living wage. That gets right to workers. Then we got to fix our public education system. It's not delivering the results our kids need.
We need to put money into charters.
Post-high school career and technical training programs doing that. You know, I'm very different than everyone else here on the stage. Prior to being in Congress, I was an entrepreneur.
There
I
go.
Started two businesses.
I'm a businessman.
I created thousands of jobs. I spent my whole career helping small to mid-sized businesses all over the country. 5,000 of them I supported. The Obama administration gave me an award for lending to disadvantaged communities. I know how to create jobs. We need a short-term strategy, which is to put money in the pockets of workers with the earned income tax credit, raising the minimum wage.
You profited off of poor people.
Strategy to make sure this country is
help that guy get some
and we're creating jobs
snow shoveling jobs. Here's a rebate.
Governor Inslee, how would
it's because
you
you're smart.
Income inequality?
Well, I'm a little bit surprised. I think plans are great, but I'm a governor, and we got to realize the people who brought us the weekend unions need are going to bring us a long overdue raise in America.
All right, choice number two for me is between Inslee and de Blasio.
Plan to reinvigorate.
I'd like him in both debates.
So we can increase wages finally. I marched with the SEIU folks. It is not right that the CEO of McDonald's makes 2,100 times more than the people slinging hash at McDonald's. And the next thing I'll do is put people to work in the jobs of the present and the future. Look at Donald Trump is simply wrong. He says wind turbines cause cancer. We know they cause jobs. And we know that we can put millions of people to work in the clean energy jobs of the future. carpenters, IBEW's members, machinists. We're doing it in my state today. And then we can do what America always does, lead the world and invent the future and put people to work. That's what we're going to do.
Congressman Ryan, President Trump, and you just referred to him, promised that manufacturing jobs were all coming back to places like your home state of Ohio. Can you make that same promise?
Yes, I believe you can. But first, let's say the president came. He said, don't sell your house to people in Youngstown, Ohio. And in his administration, just in the last 2 years, we lost 4,000 jobs at a General Motors facility that rippled throughout our community. General Motors got a tax cut. General Motors got a bailout. And then they have the audacity to move a new car that they're going to produce to Mexico. I've had family members that have to unbolt a machine from the factory floor, put it in a box, and ship it to China. My area where I come from in Northeast China. Ohio, this issue we're talking about here, it's been going on 40 years. This is not a new phenomenon in the United States of America. The bottom 60% haven't seen a raise since 1980. Meanwhile, the top 1% control 90% of the wealth. We need an industrial policy saying we're going to dominate building
Gephardt
electric vehicles.
There's going to
be 30 million made
right
in the next
here.
10 years. But I want half of a made
just,
in the
I mean,
United
listen
States.
To the rhetoric.
I want to dominate the solar industry.
And compare this to where we were 15 years ago. I mean, it's just unbelievable that you're literally 9th and 10th in the batting order are coming up with stuff that would have been, you know,
do whatever they want.
Absolutely. top of the charts
exactly
and not because
in 2008
and because it's like smart
if they
politics
can save a nickel
not
by moving a job to Mexico or to Asia or to Canada, they're going to do it. So here's what I propose for an industrial policy. Start with a place where there's a real need. There's going to be a worldwide need for green technology, ways to clean up the air, ways to clean up the water. And we can be the ones to provide that. We need to go tenfold in our research and development on green energy going forward. And then we need to say any corporation can come and use that research. They can make all kinds of products from it, but they have to be manufactured right here in the United States of America. And then we have to double down and sell it around the world. There's a $23 trillion market coming for green products. We should be the leaders and the owners, and we should have that 1.2 million manufacturing jobs here in America. We can do this.
All right, we're going to turn to the issue of health care right now. I'd really try to understand where there may or may not be daylight between you. Many people watching at home have health insurance coverage through their employer. Who here would abolish their private health insurance in favor of a government-run plan? Just a show of hands.
Just a fascinating framing.
Oh, wow. Warren's really getting serious now.
De Blasio.
I want take note. Gabbard is not.
Let me put the question to you. You're one of the Democrats who wants to keep private insurance in addition to a government health care plan. Why is an incremental approach, in your view, better than
this is where I want to just yell, pause it.
I think it's a bold approach. It's something that Barack Obama wanted to do when we were working on the Affordable Care Act, and that is a public option. I am just simply concerned about kicking half of America off of their health insurance in 4 years, which is exactly what this bill says. So let me go on beyond that. There is a much bigger issue
What's
in addition
difference?
To that. And
4 years, 8 years? What's the difference?
The president literally went on TV on Fox and said that people's heads would spin when they see how much he would bring down pharmaceutical prices. Instead, 2,500
You're right,
drugs
Amy
have
Klobuchar,
gone up
Donald Trump sucks.
Since
but
he
here's the
came
point. The framing of that question to lead with the abolishment of employer-based insurance as opposed to we're going to give you something that's going to make employer-based insurance completely obsolete, right? It's not like we're going to abolish your iPhone 1 and then we're going to replace it with an iPhone 10, right? I mean, it's like we've got an iPhone 10 and so you're going to throw away your iPhone 1.
Medicare for All plan. It would put essentially everybody on Medicare and then eliminate private plans that offer similar coverage.
Wouldn't
Is
eliminate
that the plan
just,
or path that you would pursue as president?
So, yes, I'm with Bernie on Medicare for All. And let me tell you why.
Hugging Bernie.
I spent a big chunk of my life studying
Thanks,
why families go broke. And one of the number one reasons is the cost of health care, medical bills. And that's not just for people who don't have insurance.
Back in the day, she was the one who promoted the 50% number. I mean, she did bankruptcies
at
Talking Points Memo Cafe.
As many dollars as they can in premiums and to pay out as few dollars as possible for your health care. That leaves families with rising premiums, rising co-pays, and fighting with insurance companies to try to get the health care that their doctors say that they and their children need. Medicare for All solves that problem. And I understand there are a lot of politicians who say, oh, it's just not possible, we just can't do it, it's have a lot of political reasons for this. What they're really telling you is they just won't fight for it. Well, health care is a basic human right, and I will fight for basic human rights.
Boom, there you go.
Excellent. No bullshit. Let's do this.
Congressman O'Rourke, when you ran for Senate, you also praised a bill that would replace private insurance. This year, you're saying you're no longer sure. Can you explain why?
My goal is that every American is well enough to live to their full potential because they have health care. In Laredo, Texas, I met a young man, 27 years old.
Oh, my God.
Told me that he'd been to a doctor once in his life. And on that visit, he was told he had diabetes. He was told he had glaucoma. And he was told, untreated because he doesn't have health care, he'll be dead before the age of 40. So getting to guaranteed, high-quality, universal health care as quickly and surely as possible has to be our goal. The ability to afford your prescriptions and go to a primary care provider. The ability to see a mental health care provider. In Texas, the single largest provider of mental health care services is the county jail system today. And health care also has to mean that every woman can make her own decisions about her own body and has access to the care that makes that possible.
Here's just a way.
Our plan says that if you're uninsured, we enroll you in Medicare. If you're insufficiently insured, you can't afford your premiums, we enroll you in Medicare. But if you're a member of a union that negotiated for a health care plan that you like because it works for
your
you and your family, you're able to keep it. We preserve choice by making sure that everybody has health
care. Time is up, Congressman. But I want to ask a follow-up on this one. Just to be very clear, I'll give you 10 seconds.
You
would
spent
you
most of his
private
question.
Insurance?
No, I think that choice is fundamental to our ability to get everybody cared for.
Private insurance is not working for tens of millions of Americans.
Yeah, Bill! Let's go, Bill!
The deductibles, the premiums, the out-of-pocket expenses, it's not working.
Guess who Bill de Blasio is betting on going to win the election?
They can choose Medicare. For the culinary workers in
Nevada, who are
acknowledging the system is not working for people, they're able to keep
it. Chris,
why are they defending private insurance?
They like their private health insurance, by the way. It should be noted that 100 million Americans. I mean, I think we should be the party keeps what's working and fixes what's broken. I mean, doesn't that make sense? I mean, we should give everyone in this country health care as a basic human right for free, full stop. But we should also give them the option to buy private insurance. Why do we have to stand for taking away something from people? And also, it's bad policy. If you go to every hospital in this country and you ask them one
Daddy
question,
just stepped in and beat up the mean
year,
man.
Yeah, the adults came in.
You leave my son alone.
Paid at the Medicare
I'm a businessman.
Every single hospital administrator said they would close.
He looks like a Mad Men character.
And the Medicare for All bill requires payments to stay at current Medicare rates. So to some extent, we're basically supporting a bill that will have every hospital closed. I mean, my dad was a union electrician.
That's
right. I actually grew up in a working class family. He loved the health care that the IBEW gave him. And I just always think about
government imposes anything
from a policy perspective.
Whether it's a change in light bulbs or cafe standards or Obamacare. Industry always says we're going to go out of business. And guess what? They don't.
I think we're talking about this in the wrong way. You're talking about one bill over another bill. Really what we're talking about is our objective, making sure that every single sick American in
this
country is able to get
the
health care.
This is the way that people need to listen to.
I believe Medicare for All.
When people restate
the
problem.
I also think that employers will recognize
that is when you know they're not giving a solution.
Will be saved by supporting a Medicare for All program, a program that will reduce the administrative costs, reduce the bureaucratic costs, and make sure that everyone gets that quality health care that they need. I also think if you look at other countries in the world who have universal health care, every one of them has some form of a role of private insurance. I think that's what we've got to look at, taking the best of these ideas, but making sure unequivocally that no sick American goes without getting the care that they need, regardless of how much or little money they have in their pocket.
Congresswoman, let me turn to Senator Booker on this. Senator Booker, explain to me where you are. This is hugely important to people, so tell us where you are.
I absolutely will. First of all, we're talking about this as a healthcare issue, but in communities like mine, low-income communities, nice, it's an education issue because kids who don't have healthcare are not going to succeed in school. It is an issue for jobs and employment because people who do not have good healthcare do not succeed at work. It's even a retirement issue because in my community, African Americans have a lower life expectancy because of poor healthcare. And so where I stand is very clear. Healthcare is not just a human right, it should be an American right. And I believe the best way to get there is Medicare for all. But I have an urgency about this. When I am president of the United States, I'm not going to wait. We have to do the things immediately that are going to provide better care. And on this debate, I'm sorry. There are too many people profiteering off of the pain of people in America.
Yeah, he's chosen new lane
to insurance.
Clearly.
Literally, the overhead
good
for insurers that they charge is 15%.
When the weather vane like this.
While Medicare's overhead is only 3%. 2%.
Right.
We can do this better, and every single day I will be fighting to give people more access and more affordable costs until we get to my goal, which is every American having health care.
Time is up, Senator. I want to move back, if I can, to Congressman Gabbard.
And that is that the insurance companies last year alone sucked $23 billion in profits out of the healthcare system. $23 billion. And that doesn't count the money that was paid to executives, the money that was spent lobbying Washington. We have a giant industry that wants our healthcare system to stay the way it is. Because it's not working for families, but it's sure as heck working for them.
I wonder if Bill de Blasio went up to Warren before the debate and says, just point.
Should not be an option.
Tell me who you want
me to
get.
United States of America, for any insurance company, to deny women coverage for their exercise of their right of choice. And I am the only candidate here who has passed a law protecting a woman's right of reproductive health and health insurance. And I'm the only candidate who has passed a public option. And I respect everybody's goals and plans here. But we do have one candidate that's actually advanced the ball. And we got to have access for everyone. I've done it
your
as a public
ooh, access.
First football metaphor.
I'm fascinated by this, Senator.
It's pretty amazing.
Klobuchar is like, hey, can I add another insipid, uninspiring nonsense?
Start with that. And then I just want to make very clear, I think we share the goal of universal health care.
No, we
and
don't.
The idea I put out there, the public option, which the governor was just talking about, this idea is that you use Medicare or Medicaid without any insurance companies involved. You could do it either way. And the estimates are 13 million people would see a reduction in their premiums. 12 more million people would get covered. So I think it is a beginning and the way you start and the way you move to universal health care.
Secretary Castro, this one is for you. All of you on stage support a woman's right to an abortion. You all support some version of a government health care option. Would your plan cover abortion, Mr. Secretary?
Yes, it would. I don't believe only in reproductive freedom. I believe in reproductive justice. And, you know, what that means is that just because a woman, or let's also not forget someone in the trans community, a trans female, is poor, doesn't mean they shouldn't have the right to exercise that right to choose. And so I absolutely would cover the right to have an abortion. More than that, everybody in this crowd and watching at home knows that in our country today, a person's right to choose is under assault in places like Missouri, in Alabama, in Georgia. I would appoint judges to the federal bench that understand the precedent of Roe v. Wade and will respect it. And in addition to that, make sure that we fight hard as we transition our healthcare system to one where everybody can get and exercise that right.
Senator Warren, would you put limits on any limits on abortion?
I would make certain that every woman has access to the full range of reproductive health care services, and that includes birth control, it includes abortion, it includes everything for a woman. And I want to add on that. It's not enough for us to expect the courts to protect us. 47 years ago, Roe versus Wade was decided, and we've all looked to the courts all that time as state after state has undermined Roe, has put in exceptions, has come right up to the edge of taking away protection.
Your time is up, Senator.
We now have an America where most people support Roe versus Wade. We need to make that federal law.
Thank you. Jose?
Thank you. Senator Booker, I want to kind of come back on a discussion we were having about health and the opioid crisis.
I just want people to understand this. You know, short of John Delaney and Klobuchar, you've got a stage full of people all basically pulling the Democratic Party left from where it was 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago.
They should absolutely be held criminally liable because they
are 40 years
and responsible. This is one of the reasons why
Well, that's actually Bill Fletcher Jr.'s point.
From
the party already has been moved left. The next phase is actual
have them do it. Yes,
but
yes.
Move left conversation is done. It's happened.
It is done. And this hopefully will put pressure on whoever's going to be the next leader in the House.
Right. Out of addiction for too long. It is time that we have a national urgency to deal with this problem and make the solutions that are working to actually be the law of our land and make the pharmaceutical companies that are responsible.
Oh, really? The guy who voted.
This dude.
This is amazing. He voted against importation from Canada.
This dude thinks that Warren or Bernie is going to win. He wants to be VP.
Without a doubt. Population on the face of the planet. Absolutely. Many are there for absolutely Sanders and Warren VP play right here. Possession of marijuana. Bad signal for Biden. Biden is losing tonight.
Have legalized it or decriminalized it.
Yeah.
And yet, despite what Purdue Pharma has done, their connection to the opioid crisis and the overdose deaths that we're seeing throughout this country, they've been able to act with complete impunity and pay no consequences, not a single night in jail. Unless there's accountability and justice, this crisis will continue. In my administration, we will hold them to account. We will make sure that they pay a price, and we will help those who've been victims of this malfeasance in this country, get them treatment and long-term care.
I know immigration is on a lot of your minds here, and I want to talk about it. We're going to talk about it in a moment. We need to take a break. We'll be back with more from Miami.
Yeah, I think that is, I just tweeted out that John Delaney's the only person on this stage who thinks Biden's going to win. And I think that's the case. I mean, to the extent that that a lot of these people know they are not going to be president of the United States, they are trying to establish themselves in the future of the party. And one way in which some of them surely want to do that is by getting a job in the administration. Another way some of them may want to do this is to build a base of support and as a legislator be powerful and maybe run 4 or 8 years from now. A lot of these people are young. And you can tell where they think the party is going. I mean, really, maybe it's John Delaney and maybe Amy Klobuchar.
John Delaney and Amy Klobuchar representing the Joe Crowley wing. Very spirited tonight.
I wouldn't even, I don't even, you know, Crowley, relative to the leadership, was at least somewhat aware of where things were. These guys are betting on the past.
In a certain sense.
And yes. I think.
I'm not sure about the Crowley thing, but 100% they're betting on the past.
Relative to the leadership of the.
On what issues, though?
On everything, he was, my understanding was, I'm not saying that he was to, on the
no,
left.
No, I'm just genuinely curious because I know
my
him,
understanding is that
Wall
from what I have
stuff.
What I have been told is that he was more aware of what was happening than any of the other leadership. Now, part of that is just
of
a function
connections.
Of it. And
he's
age,
union,
maybe.
And
I mean,
age.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Just a certain awareness. It wasn't in the same type of bubble.
Right.
But nevertheless, these guys are making an explicit bet on the past. And they're wrong, I think, but we can just do it by sheer numbers. I mean, it's basically 8 to 2 in terms of where the party is headed.
Turn to an issue Everyone. That has Absolutely. Been in the news, especially this week. There are undocumented children being held alone in detention, even as close as Homestead, Florida, right here, less than 30 miles from where we are tonight. Fathers and mothers and children are dying while trying to enter the United States of America. We saw that image today that broke our hearts, and they had names. Oscar Martinez and his 23-month-old daughter Valeria died trying to cross the river to ask for asylum in this country. Last month, more than 130,000 migrants were apprehended at the southern border. Secretary Castro, if you were president today, hoy, what would you specifically do?
Thank you very much, Jose. I'm very proud that in April I became the first candidate to put forward a comprehensive immigration plan. And we saw those images, watching that image of Oscar and his daughter Valeria is heartbreaking. It should also piss us all off. If I were president today,
right,
and it should spur us to action. If I were president today, I would sign an executive order that would get rid of Trump's zero-tolerance policy, the Remain in Mexico policy, and the metering policy. This metering policy is basically what prompted Oscar and Valeria to make that risky swim across the river. They have been playing games with people who are coming and trying to seek asylum at our ports of entry. Oscar and Valeria went to a port of entry, and then they were denied the ability to make an asylum claim. So they got frustrated, and they tried to cross the river, and they died because of that.
On day one, sorry.
On day one, I would do that executive order that would address metering, and then I would follow that up in my first 100 days with immigration reform that would honor asylum claims, that would put undocumented immigrants, as long as they haven't committed a serious crime, on a pathway to citizenship, and then we'd go to the root cause of the issue, which is we need a Marshall Plan for Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador so that people can find safety and opportunity at home.
I'm a little concerned about this type of Marshall Plan would entail.
Senator Booker, what would you do on day one? And this is a situation that the next president will inherit.
Well, that's why he was looking at Beto like that.
Stole my thunder.
Yeah. He's freaked out. He's trying to remember.
On day one, I will make sure that, number one, we end the ICE policies and the customs and border policies that are violating the human rights. When people come to this country, they do not leave their human rights at the border. Number two, I will make sure that we reinstate DACA, that we reinstate pathways to citizenship for DACA recipients, and to make sure that people that are here on temporary protected status can stay and remain here. And then finally,
we need
to make sure
tweeting
that we
boring.
Address the issues that made Oscar and Valeria come in the first place by making major investments in the Northern Triangle, not like this president is doing.
Okay.
By ripping away the
so they're hitting.
We need to actually
they're all hitting problem. Invest. Or not we all. The two we've heard values and think invest in security. Helping those countries sort of gain some measure of control over their civil society.
This is an important point. You know, my plan, and I'm glad to see that Senator Booker, Senator Warren, and Governor Inslee agree with me on this. My plan also includes getting rid of Section 1325 of the Immigration and Nationality Act to go back to the way we used to treat this when somebody comes across the border, not to criminalize desperation, to treat that as a civil violation.
And
here's why it's important. We see all of this horrendous family separation.
Yes.
They use that law, Section 1325, to justify.
Yeah, we've talked about this on the program quite a bit.
And so I want to challenge every single candidate on this stage to support the repeal of Section 1325.
30 seconds.
As my friend here said, I agree with him on that issue. But folks should understand that the separation of children from families doesn't just go on at our border. It happens in our communities as ICE are ripping away parents from their American children, spouses and the like, and are creating fear in cities all
but
across
the bottom
this
line
country
is,
where parents are afraid to even drop their kids.
No one, as far as I know, in the Democratic Party can articulate an overall concept. Hold on.
That tragic photo of that parent, that child, and I'm saying this as a father. Every American should feel that in their heart, and every American should say, that is not America. Those are not our values. But we have to get under the skin of why we have this crisis in our system, because we're not being honest about the division that's been fomented in this country, the way that American citizens have been told that immigrants somehow created their misery and their pain and their challenges. For all the American citizens out there who feel you're falling behind, who feel the American dream's not working for you, the immigrants didn't do that to you. The big corporations did that to you.
Hell yeah, finally. Somebody.
Once again, total real estate pawn in New York.
We need to be the party of working people, and that includes a party of immigrants. But first, we have to tell working people in America who are hurting that we're going to be on their side every single time against those big corporations who created this mess to begin with.
and remind people we're all in this together. If we don't change that debate, that politics that's holding us back, we won't get all these reforms people are talking about. That's what need to do as Democrats.
He's having the best night of anybody.
Because he knows he has one job to do.
Yeah.
Take out all of
them. What would you do, Congressman, day one at the White House?
Vamos a tratar cada persona con el respeto y dignidad que merecen como humanos.
We would not turn back
Valeria and her father, Oscar. We would accept them into this country and follow our own asylum laws. We would not build walls. We would not put kids
in cages. There's nobody
in
the Democratic Party who's basically saying, like, look, we need to demilitarize the families.
Yes.
But nobody's saying really anything. They're just attacking specific provisions.
Violence for the repeal and persecution. Of
we would make sure.
Secretary, let him finish, and I will give you.
His policy
but let him finish. Let him finish, please. Yes.
We would not detain any family fleeing violence. In fact, fleeing the deadliest
That's
countries on the face of the planet today. We would implement a family case management program so they could be cared for in the community at a fraction of the cost. And then we would rewrite our immigration laws in our own image. Free dreamers forever from any fear of deportation by making them U.S. citizens here in this country. Invest in solutions in Central America. Work with regional stakeholders so there's no reason to make
Thank
that 2,000-mile journey to
but
this
we
country.
Have Secretary, I'll give you 30 seconds.
Let's be very clear. The reason that they're separating these little children from their families is that they're using Section 1325 of that act, which criminalizes coming
Look, we've talked about this in the past.
Incarcerate the parents
Under
and
Obama,
them.
If you came
Some
into this country
have called to end
with a child and you were carrying drugs
Some,
or
like
you were abusing the children, you would get separated because you would be charged with a crime. Up until the Trump administration changed it, it was not a crime to come in the first time. It was a civil violation, in which case they could not separate the children.
Let me respond to this very briefly. Actually, as a member of Congress,
this is a slam dunk. I don't know why you wouldn't get rid of
that. Would ensure that we don't criminalize those who are seeking asylum and refuge in this country. If you're fleeing, desperation, then I want to make sure.
It's amazing how Beto is not.
But you're looking at just one small part of this. I'm talking about a comprehensive.
But he will not answer this question. This is sort of shocking.
I'm talking about
Castro knows this is his Achilles heel. There must be some like internal politics in Texas that keeps him from doing this. You know, this is the problem that he's going
to
have now.
Want to repeal Section 1325
because he's trying to keep the door open for a Texas career. And so he's afraid of going too far. Get out now. Save yourself for Texas.
Title 18 of the U.S. Code, Title 21 and Title 22 already cover human trafficking.
If you did your homework on this issue, we should and could be talking about this for a long time.
Somebody didn't do their homework.
Can we talk about the condition as to why people are coming here?
Beto looking at Delaney like, Dad!
Delaney is Beto's dad.
Delaney's totally Beto's dad. Also an accountant who makes weird jokes sometimes.
And what are we going to do to actually make a difference in these countries?
We're going to have them all work at McDonald's, and I'm going to actually monetize their pay.
I figured out said he wants to no longer have it be a crime to illegally cross the border. Do you support that? Do you think it should be a civil offense only? And if so, do you worry about potentially incentivizing people to come here?
Immigrants, they do not diminish America. They are America. And I am happy to look at his proposal, but I do think you want to make sure that you have provisions in place that allow you to go after traffickers and allow you to go after people who are violating the law.
Can.
What I really think we need to step back and talk about is the economic imperative here. And that is that 70 of our Fortune 500 companies are headed up by people that came from other countries. 25% of our U.S. Nobel laureates were born in other countries. We have a situation right now where we need workers in our fields and in our factories. We need them to start small businesses. We need their ideas.
No,
and this president
no solution,
has
just
literally
broad
gone
principles
backwards
based upon some problem
at a time
she doesn't
where
have.
Our economy needs
and
immigrants.
And all the
so
Democrats.
My proposal is to look at that 2013 bill that passed
pass the Senate with Republican support to upgrade that bill to make it as good as possible and get it done. It brings the debt down.
Look at something that happened and make it better, whatever that means.
It gives a path to citizenship.
And to be fair,
for people who can become citizens. And it would be so much better for our economy in America.
That's time. Thank you.
To be fair, the whole Democratic Party has this problem.
To illegally cross the border, or should it be a civil offense only?
Well, I agree with Secretary Castro. I think there are other provisions in the law that will allow you to prosecute people for coming over here if they're dealing in drugs and other things. That's already established in the law. So there's no need to repeat it. And I think it's abhorrent. We're talking about this father who got killed with his daughter. And the issues here, the way these kids are being treated, if you go to Guantanamo Bay, there are terrorists that are held that get better health care than those kids that have tried to cross the border.
Weird
in the United
frame
States.
To remind us of a thing that should have been shut down ages ago, where people were tortured.
Doctors and nurses to go immediately down to the border and start taking
people
care of
people in Rikers
kids.
Island are getting a free pass.
We running here, where we have a president of the United States who's so focused on hate and fear and division, and what has happened now, the end result, is now we've got kids literally laying in their
I'll tell you this.
Snot.
Ryan definitely has that quality of not
changed.
Being ready for prime time in a way that you would imagine a Speaker of the House would be. But I just don't know that he has the legislative chops or the managerial chops either.
Jose asked the question. If you're president on day one, what will you do with the fact that you will have families here? There's been a lot of talk about what you'll do in the first 100 days, about legislation. What will you actually do with these families? How will you care for them? Will they be detained?
I can't get over how happy Brendan is about de Blasio kicking ass.
Oh, yeah, he's
a great time. What we're talking about, what Secretary Castro and I are talking about, is that we have the power to better deal with this problem through the civil process than the criminal process. I have been to some of the largest private prisons, which are repugnant to me, that people are profiting off incarceration and their immigration lockups. Our country has made so many mistakes by criminalizing things, whether it's immigration, whether it's mental illness, whether it's addiction. We know that this is not the way to deal with problems. There is a humane way that affirms human rights and human dignity and actually solve this problem. Donald Trump isn't solving this problem. We've seen under his leadership a surge at our border. We solve this problem by making investments in the Northern Triangle to stop the reasons why people are being driven here in the first place. And we make sure we use our resources to provide health care, to affirm the values and human dignity of the people that come here, because we cannot sacrifice our values,
this
our ideals
is the
as
day
a nation
Cory Booker became
security.
Vice President.
We can have both by doing this the right way.
All right,
this is the day Cory Booker became Bill de Blasio's Vice President.
What would you do on day one? Same question I just asked Cory Booker. I have yet to hear an answer
there
from anyone on
no
this stage. What will you do with the families that will be here?
There is no reason for the detention and separation of these children. They should be released pending their hearings, and they should have a hearing, and the law should be followed. That's what should happen. And we should do what we're doing in Washington State. I'm proud that we've passed a law that prevents local law enforcement from being turned into mini ICE agents. I'm proud to have been the first governor to
who's
going to
call for the abolition of ICE?
I'm proud it's to time. Be a person who's not only talked about Dreamers, but being one of the first to make sure that they get a college education so that they can realize their dreams. These are some of the most inspirational people in our state. And I'll leave you with this thought, if you want to know what I think. Donald Trump the other day tried to threaten me. He thought it was a threat to tell me that he would send refugees in Washington State if we passed a law that I passed. And I told him that's not a threat at all. We welcome refugees into our state. We recognize diversity as a strength. This is how we've built America. That tradition is going to continue if I'm president of the United States.
We're going to switch to another topic now. We've got a lot to get through.
My grandfather was actually separated from his family when we're going to
talk about Iran right now because we're working against the clock. Tankers have been attacked. A U.S. drone has been shot
now,
down.
Now, the UAE has now said that Iran was, they don't think Iran was the attacker, right? The UAE backed off.
What I want to know is how do you dial it back? So a show of hands, who as president would sign on to the 2015 nuclear deal as it was originally negotiated?
Booker says no.
Cory, Senator Booker, why not?
May I address that? First and foremost, it was a mistake to pull out of that deal. And one of the reasons why we're seeing this hostility now is because Donald Trump is marching us to a far more dangerous situation. Literally, he took us out of a deal that gave us transparency into their nuclear program and pushed back a nuclear breakout 10, 20 years. And now we see Iran threatening to go further, and we're being pulled in further and further into this crisis. We need to renegotiate and get back into a deal, but I'm not going to have a primary platform to say unilaterally I'm going to rejoin that deal, because when I'm president of the United States, I'm going to do the best I can to secure this country and that region and make sure that if I have an opportunity to leverage a better deal, I'm going
to
do it.
All right. Senator Klobuchar, I'd like you to answer the question because you've said you
and Shmuley Botek smiles a thousand smiles.
Can you argue that that nuclear pact, as it was ratified, was a good deal?
Yes, it was.
It was imperfect, but it was a good deal for that moment. I would have worked to get longer sunset periods, and that's something we could negotiate.
This was an incredible deal.
Oh, my God. Megan McCain.
Out of it, that he was going to give us a better deal. Those were his words. And now we are a month away from
She's the worst.
Iranians,
she is the absolute worst.
Now that they're going to blow the caps on enriching
uranium. We just had a Megan McCain tweet where she was complaining that nobody on the Democratic primary was attempting to reach out to Republicans.
Attempting to reach out to Republicans just means mentioning my father.
Right.
And understanding why you would want to torture children.
It's almost, I almost like would donate the max to a candidate just to see if they mentioned John McCain in the next debate, if she came out with a tweet in support of that person.
Oh, of course. I think that Corey answer on Iran is qualifying to me.
Hey, folks, I apologize for talking over Amy Klobuchar.
I don't. I think I absolutely do not.
And I don't think we should conduct foreign policy in our bathrobe at 5 in the morning.
Oh, really? Maybe like...
that's a tough thing for her to say after there's reports that she had a staffer shave her legs on the way to a in the back of a car.
Iran's support for Hezbollah.
Let's deal with the situation where we are, where this president and his chicken hawk cabinet have led us to the brink of war with Iran. I served in the war in Iraq at the height of the war in 2005, a war that took over 4,000 of my brothers and sisters in uniforms' lives. The American people need to understand that this war with Iran would be far more devastating, far more costly than anything that we ever saw in Iraq. It would take many more lives, it would exacerbate the refugee crisis, and it wouldn't be just contained within Iran. This would turn into a regional war. This is why it's so important that every one of us, every single American, stand up and say, no war with Iran. We need to get back into the Iran nuclear agreement, and we need to negotiate how we can improve it. It was an imperfect deal. There are issues like their missile development that needs to be addressed. We can do both simultaneously to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon and preventing us from going to war.
Your time is up. I have just a very quick follow-up. Well, what would your red line be for military action against Iran?
Look, obviously, if there was an attack against the American, our troops, then there would have to be a response. But my point is, and it's important for us to recognize this, is Donald Trump and his cabinet, Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, and others, are creating a situation that just a spark would light off a war with Iran, which is incredibly dangerous. That's why we need to de-escalate tensions. Trump needs to get back into the Iran nuclear deal and swallow his pride.
I'll do it if you call it the Trump deal.
Hey, but wait a minute.
All right, we are out of time. We're up against a hard break, but we will have much more. Mayor de Blasio will have more. The commercial is coming.
He wants to get more powers
out. Rachel Maddow, stick around. We'll have a lot more with some very anxious candidates just ahead.
I got to say, I mean, so far, from the perspective of somebody who follows politics, turn this down. From the perspective of people, of a person who follows politics quite a bit, I'm super happy that there are 8 candidates on that stage who are, in from my perspective, pushing the party to the left from where the ballast has been in the past. I saw a tweet from Ezra Klein saying that, you know, because this is the first debate, Why not let them all stand up and basically give their platforms on some level? And I think there's some validity to that. But obviously, from a television perspective, you want conflict. That's what gets you, drives the interest. And frankly, too, people should also understand that I don't know that anybody assesses the policies. I mean, I think we do. I think there's obviously a lot of listeners and viewers who do. But there's also a lot of people out there who just take sort of broad cues as to what they like, and which is, I think, highly problematic. But that's a, you know, that's chapter 7 of my Blame the Voters book and Blame Human Beings book, which is, you know, the sequel about and companies, which is that people take their cues from demeanor.
Absolutely.
As opposed to the substance of what's being said. And so, which is
why de Blasio is having the strongest night. I would never thought that a thing based on demeanor would break Bill de Blasio. I just want to say, with Iran, I think, you know, Tulsi gave a good answer. Cory Booker's answer was horrible. And I'm sure Klobuchar's was terrible, but we talked over it, thankfully. But I just want to say really quickly that it's really important.
Wait, what?
No, really, I just really important before we get to that. Every single senator in this Democratic caucus voted for Iran sanctions in 2017 besides Bernie Sanders. That's huge. And that's another way in which Sanders stands out in the most important foreign policy issue we face.
So Tulsi Gabbard's sister tweeted out on the Tulsi Gabbard Twitter, it's clear who MSNBC wants to be president, Elizabeth Warren. They're giving her more time than all the other candidates combined. They aren't giving any time to Tulsi at all.
She isn't getting much time.
She wasn't. There was a lot of people who were not as well.
I don't think Warren's getting the most time.
Can go
time,
by
though.
Poll no. numbers.
I mean,
who's
Warren
getting the,
got
who's getting the most time?
Well, Warren got another question, a second question after they went out like two or three people from the center. The center is where the highest poll numbers are. But I mean, ratio wise, frankly, if you were to dole it out based upon the interest of people, no one outside of Warren and maybe one or two other people would have gotten any questions. I mean, you know, let's be honest here. They've given me no time to talk on MSNBC as well. And I may very well run for the Libertarian presidential candidates. I think MSNBC is doing a pretty good job. I mean, I think these questions are good.
It seems proportional to how serious they are as candidates.
Yeah. I think.
Well, also, I mean,
I think there's a good debate.
When the ball's in the court, they end up, you know, throwing it at who they're targeting, and that's been Beto a lot, and he's been receiving a lot of flack from everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a good debate so far, I have to say. I mean, I've seen some real crap shows, and now maybe by the time we get to October, we're going to be really bored with this stuff.
I'm starting to think that Beto wasn't born for this, actually.
I am starting to think that, yes. Whoever told Beto that he was born for this.
Well, we know who told him. John Delaney, his dad.
Yes. You're born to do this. I'm going to get in the back, son, and tell them they don't deserve any fucking health insurance. Like, but my dad was a union maker. And then you're going to go out there and speak that fucking Spanish.
He's like the dad that forces his kid to keep playing catch even after he got a black
new
eye.
Crew. They put in the new crew.
So right now, let's turn it over to Chuck Todd and Rachel Maddow.
Oh, yuck. Yeah. And now the debate
Russia
goes
second.
Bad. Russia, Russia, Russia.
20 candidates qualified for
Should
this first
called
Democratic
concentration
debate. We're going to hear
camps?
From 10 tonight,
Let's
10
see.
More tomorrow. The breakdown for each night was
we already
selected
know this.
At
it's
random.
Halfway through.
Now the candidates will have 60
yeah,
seconds
Rachel.
To answer.
Rachel is such a pedant that she needs
if necessary,
to re-review
and we will be ruthless
everything.
If necessary.
How many people are tuning in exactly at 10 p.m.?
Hi, Chuck. How are you doing?
Good.
And we've got a lot of ground to cover. We're going to be talking about guns and climate here up top. A whole lot more in this hour. Obviously, because of the size of the field, not every person will be able to weigh in on everything, but over the course of this
a
next hour,
message to
we
Tulsi's
will hear
sister.
From everyone. I promise everybody. And to begin with, we're going to go with guns. And Senator Warren, I want to start with you. We are less than 50 miles from Parkland, Florida, where 17 people were killed in a school shooting last year, and where there has been significant activism on gun violence
What's going
ever
on?
Since. Many of you are calling for a restoration of an assault weapons ban. But even if implemented, there will still be hundreds of millions of guns in this country, Should there be a role for the federal government?
Other mics are on.
Everybody's mics are on. I think we have a...
Yeah, they get a mic problem.
I heard that too. That's okay. I think we had a little mic issue in the back.
Little mic issue.
We've got content.
Yeah, we have the audience audio. All right.
Great.
So the question is simply this. I apologize, you guys didn't get to hear this, the first part of the question.
It's the feedback problem.
Obviously, we're not far from Parkland, Florida. Gun activism has become a big part of high school life up there in Broward County. Many of you are calling for tighter gun restrictions. Some of you are calling for the restoration of the assault weapons ban. But even if it's put in place, there's still going to be perhaps hundreds
Turn the mics off!
Guns still on the streets. Is there a role for the federal government?
Jesus Christ, who's doing this? NRA TV?
To get these guns off the streets.
Someone's got my binder.
Someone's got his binder.
What's happening?
We are hearing our colleagues' audio. If the control room could turn off the mics. If the control room could turn off the mics of our previous moderators.
Unprofessional.
Wow, this is why we shouldn't have a climate debate.
We prepared for everything.
Guess what, guys?
We did not prepare for this.
We are going to take a quick break. We're going to get this technical situation fixed. We will be right back.
All right, good. Well, I got some some text. We don't have the IMs up. I should put the IMs up. Yeah. I'm going to do that. If you get the Majority Report app at majorityapp.com, you will be able to IM us, and I will take your IMs right now. I'm just getting texts. My friend Henry says that we should be drinking every time a Democrat says they used to be blank, whatever the position that they used to have. I don't know if we'll do that.
I want to add at the end of the day to the drinking game.
All right. I mean, I would end up drinking myself because I say that too often. That is that was an old showbiz term back in the day.
By the way, we're about 600 or 700 people behind the Crooked Media live stream right
now. Folks, you know, we could be better than Pod Save America in terms of these numbers if you go out there and get your friends to switch over. It's only so many times I can put this on Bumble and and tell people.
Each logged into different Sam dating accounts. I'm on OkCupid. Matt's on Hinge. That's Michael's right. on Tinder.
We're all just promoting the show. And Kyle says, for the 10-year anniversary, we are doing a marathon show, non-negotiable. Back in the day, during the Occupy, we did a 12-hour show. And by we, I mean I did a 12-hour show. I think you
No.
You weren't there?
Here. Mm-mm.
Dorsey, I think, was around. Brendan, would you get me another one of these important political analysis tools? Thank you. PJ, guys, I'm going to create a company called Blah, Blah, Blah. It's going to be cheaper and more efficient than the post office. Dave Rubin is right. I'm going to prove you wrong. Left is best. The DX Full. Hi, folks. Happy Bolshevik bank robbery anniversary day. Oh, and the things I could tell you about the only Krishna Samoan American running for president when she was on my county council while her homophobic dad was the state legislature for Sandwich Islands.
Call in.
I would take calls for that.
Call in.
DX Fool.
Tulsi fans are extremely touchy. I have never seen such.
Folks, let me put it this way: you can call in right now, but I'm not going to promise you we're going to take any calls. So if you call in, you're going to get hold. But DX Fool, if you write me your area code, I will pick up your call. Rando, how do you think Jamie feels about Beto right now? Yeah, Jamie's not here because she had to go to a DSA function, I think, or something. And
I think she's backstage.
She's backstage. She's in the Klobuchar prep team.
I feel like her Beto crush, I think.
I don't know.
He's having a tough time today.
I don't know. I think Jamie would see, like, I can't take this guy to Chiapas with that.
Yeah.
But, that gambit.
He's too mopey.
But with that said, there's a certain vulnerability about him that I find attractive tonight. He looks like he's in distress, and I want to help him. a Western masshole. Poop a dupe. All right. Fair enough. Anarcho succadem. Should Bernie advocate prosecution of ICE at The Hague? That might go a little far, yeah. But I would say we got a problem. I hate this expression, says A. Fox. This de Blasio is crushing it.
He really is. I can't, I mean, again, he's a total real estate pawn. He's not a great mayor, Jones. But he's killing it.
Alex Jones, it's the night of de Blasio's life.
We believe we have the technical difficulties.
Never say that.
But we will march forward here.
And Moscow forward here was interested bit. In Senator our Warren, technical
we're going to get to the gun question
Russia
here. Parkland, Florida.
Russia.
In Broward County, as you know, it has created a lot of teenage activism on the gun issue. It has inspired a lot of you to come out with more robust plans to deal with guns, including assault weapons ban. But even if you're able to implement that, what do you do about the hundreds of millions of guns already out there? And does the federal government have to play a role in dealing with it?
So in this period of time that I've been running for president, I've had more than 100 town halls. I've taken more than 2,000 unfiltered questions. And the single hardest question I've gotten, I got one from a little boy and I got one from a little girl. And that is to say, when you're president, how are you going to keep us safe? That's our responsibility as adults. 7 children will die today from gun violence, children and teenagers. And they won't just die in mass shootings. They'll die on sidewalks. They'll die in playgrounds. They'll die in people's backyards. Gun violence is a national health emergency in this country, and we need to treat it like that. So what can we do? We can do the things that are sensible. We can do the universal background checks. We can ban the weapons of war. But we can also double down on the research and find out what really works, where it is that we can make the differences at the margins that will keep our children safe. We need to treat this like the virus that's killing our children.
You didn't address, do you think the federal government needs to go and figure out a way to get the guns that are already out there?
What I think we need to do is we need to treat it like a serious research problem, which we have not done. Okay. You know, guns in the hands of a collector.
Dull answer.
Well, but she's right.
For decades,
we have specific laws that prevent
safety seriously.
The CDC from investigating this stuff.
From guns
and we have limitations
that
the federal government is limited in what it can do because of the Supreme Court at this point.
We have to treat it like a public health emergency.
Now,
that means bring data to bear, and it means
part of it might be we need to. Part of that answer could be
Senator Booker. You
we need to pack the Supreme Court.
That's an interesting.
You have a federal government buyback program in your.
But nobody's going to say that.
How is that
nobody's going to open up that can of worms for no reason.
I want to say,
except for me.
I both have been hearing this on the campaign
and you're
trail.
Not there because of the craven bias.
I hear
total
gunshots in my neighborhood. I think I'm the only
that
one.
May be
I'm
my
the
position.
Only one on this panel here that had 7 people shot in their neighborhood just last week. Someone I knew, Shahad Smith, was killed with an assault rifle at the top of my block last year. For millions of Americans, this is not a policy
he
issue.
He still lives in Newark.
This is an urgency.
People
and for those
know.
Who have not been directly affected, they're tired of living in a country where their kids go to school to learn about reading, writing, and arithmetic, and how to deal with an active shooter in their school. This is something that I'm tired of, and I'm tired of hearing people all they have to offer is thoughts and prayers. In my faith, people say faith without works is dead. So we will find a way. But the reason we have a problem right now is we've let the corporate gun lobby frame this debate. It is
look
time
at that.
That
he wouldn't have said corporate gun lobby a couple
and,
months
and,
ago.
And look at what's also fascinating about this
is, not about policy,
is how
this
animated
is Thank you,
he's
Booker.
Getting.
Secretary Castro, I'd like to talk to you about something that Secretary
not for
Senator
nothing.
Booker just mentioned there. The
Barack Obama could never do that.
Drills in schools. A school shooting
could never
like
do that.
An almost every day or every week occurrence now. They don't make a complete news
and maybe,
cycle
and
anymore,
I don't
no
know,
matter,
maybe this is too broad of
As
a statement, but Cory
so
Booker can do that because Barack Obama was already president.
Right.
Changed in federal law that might affect
and he's running for vice president.
And he's running for vice president.
Is this a problem that is going to
it
continue
you're
to
running
get worse
to be head of,
over
HUD.
Our lifetimes? Or is there something that you would do as president that you really think would turn it around?
Yeah, Rachel, I
and what's the Russian
the dad of a 10-year-old girl, Karina, who's here tonight.
And the worst thing is knowing that your child might be worried about what could happen at school, a place that's supposed to be safe. The answer to your question is no, we don't have to accept that. And I believe that on January 20th, 2021, at 12:01 p.m., we're going to have a Democratic president, a Democratic House, and a Democratic Senate.
Ronzo.
I hope he's right.
The activists of Parkland,
your lips to Allah's ears,
who have risen up across the United States and inspired so many people.
All right, where's de Blasio? I wanted de Blasio to talk about
legislative action, but we're getting closer. The House took a vote. In the Senate, the question often is if the decision is between 60 votes, a filibuster, or passing common sense gun reform, I'm going to choose common sense gun reform. So I believe that we're going to be able to get that done in 2021.
Rachel, Secretary Castro, thank you.
Rachel, I have something to add to this briefly.
Well, give you have 30 seconds for follow-up on that question, on that answer from Secretary Castro. Congressman Ryan.
You're talking about in the schools. These kids are traumatized. I support all the gun reforms here. We need to start dealing with the trauma that our kids have. We need trauma-based care in every school. We need social and emotional learning in every school. 90% of the shooters who do school shootings come from the school they're in, and 73% of them feel shamed, traumatized, or bullied. We need to make sure that these kids feel connected to the school.
I know it's just, I know it's the mindfulness thing, but I like he's putting these issues on the table, too. I think this is really healthy. I'm not being ironic. I think this is great. Everybody should talk about this, too.
We need reform around trauma-based care.
Yes.
President O'Rourke, you're a Texan who's campaigned all over the state in 2018 in the most conservative parts there. What do you tell a gun owner who may agree with you on everything else? Okay, but says, you know what? The Democrats, if I vote for them in there, they're going to take my gun away. God. And even though I agree with you on all these other issues, how do you have that conversation?
Here's how we had that conversation in Texas. I shared with them what I learned from those students who survived the Santa Fe High School shooting. A young student named Bree, her friend Marcel, who survived another shooting, the mother of a victim who lost her life, Rhonda Hart. They talked about universal background checks, where you close every loophole. We know that they save lives. Talked about ending the sales of assault weapons into our communities. Those weapons of war were designed to kill people as effectively and as efficiently as possible. They should belong on the battlefield and not in our communities. Red flag laws, so that if someone poses a danger to themselves or to someone else, they're stopped before it's too late. And what I found in each one of those 254 counties is that Democrats and independents and Republicans, gun owners and non-gun owners alike, agreed. But this effort must be led by the young people that you referenced at the beginning of this issue. Those students from Marjory Stoneman Douglas led the charge here in Florida, and they've been able to change those laws. They're making our democracy work, ensuring that our values and our interests and our priorities are reflected in the laws that we pass.
Chuck, thank you, Congressman O'Rourke. Hang on. Let me give 30 seconds. Senator Klobuchar, the Iron Range, I'm curious.
Why is he keep going to Klobuchar?
Right?
If this is just like proportions to somebody's
poll
numbers.
How do you not have that conversation?
Well, that's not
who the hell cares what she has to say about anything?
Give them the offer to buy back their gun. But I'll say this. I look at these proposals and I say,
I think you want to also have a broad range of perspectives.
Then go to Delaney. At least he has an entertainment quality.
These proposals don't do this. When I was a prosecutor, I supported the assault weapon ban.
But he knows that he's going to get her perspective.
When I was in the Senate, I saw those moms from Sandy Hook come and try to advocate for change. And
Delaney is like some enraged accountant.
Now
there,
these
like
Parkland
happy
kids
hour
from
a hotel
Florida,
bar.
They start.
I agree with you. I'm more progressive than you think. You know, but I'll tell you what. Like you're not going to get government health care.
Kids talk to their parents.
Hey, I certainly want women to have all the opportunities that are out there.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean they should be bitches. You're like, all right, thank you, sir. Thank you. Have a good one.
No, wait a second. I'm going to buy you a drink.
This one's on me.
Now for everybody. Now for everybody.
Barkeep. See, I tipped him good. What's your name, Juan?
Was preventing President Obama from filling a Supreme Court seat. Having served with Republicans on the Judiciary Committee, do you believe they would confirm your court nominees?
I'm going to use 20 of my seconds just to say there's one thing we don't all agree with when it comes to guns, and I think it's common sense, and over 70% of Americans agree with me. If you need a license to drive a car, you should need a license to buy and own a firearm.
And not everybody in this field agrees with that, but in states like Connecticut that did that, they saw 40% drops in gun violence and 15% drops in suicides. We need to start having bold agendas on guns. When it comes to the Supreme Court, very clearly, I agree with my friend, Secretary Castro, we are going to get to 50 votes in the Senate. This is a team sport. Whoever is our nominee needs to campaign in places like South Carolina, because we can elect Jamie Harrison. They need to campaign in places like Iowa, because we can win a Senate seat there. This is about getting us back to having 50 votes in the Senate and more, so that we can not only balance the Supreme Court, but start to pass an aggressive agenda that, frankly, isn't so aggressive because most of America agrees with the policy objectives of our party.
Mayor de Blasio,
Hold on for a second. My dad had guns. You have any idea what kind of revenue I do?
Saying what you want to have happen and having it happen. If you nominate a Supreme Court nominee as President of the United States and Mitch McConnell is still Senate Majority Leader, what makes you believe that he would allow you to make a nominee?
Clip him, Rachel.
Rachel, I am chief executive of the nation's largest city, and I also want to just say something quick on the gun issue and come to your question. Look, I run the largest police force in America, too, and if we're going to stop these shootings, we're going to get these guns off the street, we have to have a very different relationship between our police and our community. I also want to say there's something that sets me apart from all my colleagues running in this race. That is, for the last 21 years, I've been raising a black son in America. And I have had to have very, very serious talks with my son, Dante, about how to protect himself on the streets of our city and all over this country, including how to deal with the fact that he has to take special caution because there have been too many tragedies between our young men and our police, too, as we saw recently in Indiana. So we need to have a different conversation in this country about guns, but also a different conversation about policing that brings police and community together. We've done that in New York City, and we've driven down crime while we've done it. But to your question about Mitch McConnell, there's a political solution that we have to come to grips with. If the Democratic Party would stop acting like the party of the elites and be the party of working people again and go into states, including red states, to convince people we're on their side, we can put pressure on their senators to actually have to vote for the nominees that are put forward. Decent jurists.
That's very nice, you tall fuck. Thanks, everybody, for copying all my shit again.
30 seconds. I promise. Let me get this question. We're trying. I know you guys, we got other issues we're trying to get to, including a big one coming up in a minute. But, Senator Warren, I want to continue on the Mitch McConnell thing, because you have a lot of ambitious plans. You have a plan for that. Okay. We talked about the Supreme Court. Do you have a plan to deal with Mitch McConnell if you don't beat him in the Senate, if he's still sitting there as the Senate Majority Leader? It's very plausible you'd be
elected
president.
She can't say assassination, right? That would be inappropriate.
Do you have a plan to deal with Mitch McConnell? What?
I do.
She will get back into contention for me.
It's called a milkshake.
Yeah.
Milkshake him!
Milkshake Mitch. Milkshake Mitch.
We are a democracy.
Satire.
And the way a democracy supposed to work is the will of the people matters.
No, but seriously,
now,
out him.
We, for far too long, have had a Congress in Washington that has just completely dismissed what people care about across this country. They have made this country work much better for those who can make giant contributions, made it work better for those who hire armies of lobbyists and lawyers, and not made it work for the people. Well, here's how I see this happening. Number one, sure, I want to see us get a Democratic majority in the Senate. But short of a Democratic majority in the Senate, you better understand, the fight still goes on. It starts in the White House, and it means that everybody we energize in 2020 stays on the front lines
I was just going to say, I was waiting for this pivot where she addresses Bernie's critique tomorrow. Great. I'm going to get to my second set of ideas.
That's a fucking good point.
Congressman Delaney, you seem to believe you can do everything in a bipartisan manner. Mitch McConnell doesn't operate that way. He operates
operates differently, why do you think he is going to conform to
this
side?
This should be rich.
I think we need to get things done. That's why I believe we need to operate in a bipartisan manner.
Right.
Listen, I'll sign
yeah,
into
look,
law
my friend Bob.
Bills that come to the White House that are passed on a party line basis, absolutely. But all the big transformative
wow,
things
so
we've
big
ever
of
done
you.
In this country's history have happened when huge majorities of the American people get behind them, which is why we need real solutions, not impossible promises. We need to put forth ideas that work, whether it's on health care, creating universal health care.
Is that
so
the sound of a unicorn?
But
I hope so.
Making private insurance illegal. Okay. The gun issue is related. The gun safety issue is related because I can't tell you how many times I've been with folks in Western Maryland and they've said to me, you know, Democrats don't do anything for us. Republicans don't do anything for us.
Oh,
you fight
God,
all the
dude.
Time. So they vote
Weird
on that
way.
Single issue.
Okay,
if we become the party.
No, listen to me. That's
sure
my friend Bob. He doesn't think black people should be allowed to vote. I disagree with him. But he's a good guy.
Senator,
we can do work.
30 seconds. How do you deal with Mitch McConnell? You've been in the Senate. You can't get bills on the floor right now with Mitch McConnell. Presidents can't do it. Is President Booker going to get his bills on the floor with Senator McConnell?
You know, when I got to the United States Senate, going back to what de Blasio said, as an African-American man in an African-American-dominated community, I knew one of the biggest issues was criminal justice reform. From police accountability to dealing with the fact that we have a nation that has more African-Americans under criminal supervision than all the slaves in 1850. And when I got to the Senate, people told me we could not get a comprehensive criminal justice reform bill done. As my colleagues in the Senate know, I fought on that bill from the day I got to the Senate, built coalitions across the aisle, and today we passed the First Step Act. It's not as far as I want to go, but thousands of people will be liberated.
I am very, very skeptical of Cory Booker, but he's doing an exceptional job.
It's de Blasio and Booker are having the best performance.
I'm just tweeting, John DeLioni almost literally said wishing upon unicorns is the most practical plan to pass bipartisan legislation.
You have staked your candidacy on the issue of climate change. It is first, second, and
Why?
Third priority
and do
you
blame
for you.
Russia for climate change?
Let's get specific. We're here in Miami, which is already experiencing serious flooding on sunny days as a result of sea level rise. Parts of Miami Beach and the Keys could be underwater in our lifetimes. Does your plan save Miami?
Yes, first by taking away the filibuster from Mitch McConnell to start with.
Thank you for answering the fucking question. Jay Inslee.
We are the first generation to feel the sting of climate change, and we are the last that can do something about it. Our towns are burning, our fields are flooding, Miami is inundated. And we have to understand, this is a climate crisis, an emergency, and it is our last chance in the administration, next one, to do something about it. And we need to do what I've done in my state. We've passed a 100% clean electrical grid bill. We now have a vision statement, and my plan has been called the gold standard of putting people to work. But the most important thing on this, and the biggest decision for the American public, is who's going to make this the first priority? And I am the candidate and the only one who's saying this has to be the top priority of the United States, the organizing principle to mobilize the United States so that we can do what we've always done, lead the world and invent the future and put 8 million people to work.
Governor,
that's what we're
going to
do.
Governor,
Congressman O'Rourke, you've also put out a big climate change plan from your campaign. You want some big changes in a pretty short period of time, including switching to renewable energy, pushing to replace gas-powered cars in favor of electric ones. What's your message to a voter who supports the overall goal of what you're trying to do, but suddenly feels
the government's
okay. telling them how to live and ordering them how to live? What is that balance like?
Oh, my God.
I think you've got to bring everybody in to the decisions and the solutions to the challenges that we face. That's why we're traveling everywhere, listening to everyone. We were in Pacific Junction, a town that had never meaningfully flooded before, just up against the Missouri River in Iowa. And every home in that community had flooded. There were farms just outside of Pacific Junction that were effectively lakes. Those farmers already underwater in debt. Their markets closed to them by a trade war under this administration. And now they don't know what to do. We in our administration are going to fund resiliency in those communities in Miami, in Houston, Texas, those places that are on the front lines of climate change.
Resiliency?
Today. We're going to mobilize $5 trillion in this economy over the next 10 years. We're going to free ourselves from a dependence on fossil fuels.
The way we're going to deal with climate change, we're going to fund the fire department.
Right. Renewable and sustainable agriculture to make sure that we capture more carbon out of the air and keep more of it in the soil, paying farmers for the environmental services that they want to provide. If all of us does all that we can, then we're going to be able to keep this planet from warming another 2 degrees
I feel bad for any staffers here.
We were force-fed all the baby boomer TV. We didn't have our chance to grow.
I feel bad for every staffer.
Who pays for the mitigation to climate, whether it's building seawalls, for people that are perhaps living in places that they shouldn't be living? Is this a federal government issue that needs to do that? Do they have to move these people?
Well,
what do you
do
about that?
We subsidize.
Maybe they're building a house somewhere.
We subsidize right now coastal insurance
how much should the
with our taxes.
Right.
Well, very expensive house.
Represents the vast majority of the issue.
Obviously,
in
some
fact,
that are not.
My first visit after I announced my candidacy wasn't to Iowa or New Hampshire. It was to San Juan.
I've just been told that we are 400 viewers away from overtaking Pod Save America. Look, I don't want to. It's not about that, guys.
With executive experience,
it is about
track record of getting things done. When I was mayor of San Antonio, we moved our local public utility.
If it doesn't happen
tonight, we began to shift it from coal-fired plants to
President Obama.
Solar and other renewables, and also created more than 800 jobs.
I'm not getting a strong West Wing.
And when I was HUD secretary, we worked on the National Disaster Resilience Competition to invest in communities that were trying to rebuild from natural disasters.
Definitely
in
not
a sustainable
having a
way.
Night,
that's the way that we're going to help make sure that we're all safe.
If he was
in
any actual position, people
change.
Would be like,
if I elected president, the first thing that I would do, like Senator Klobuchar also
thank
has
you,
said, is sign an executive order recommitting us to the Paris Climate Accord so that we
thank
lead again.
I got a full question for you here, which is simply this. There are a lot of the climate plans include pricing carbon. Taxing carbon in some way. This type of proposal has been tried in a few places, whether it's Washington State, where voters voted it down. You've had the Yellow Vest movement. We had in Australia one party get rejected out of fear
of the cost
of climate change sort of being put on the backs of the consumer.
Remember what the Republican
if
debate was like.
If pricing carbon is just politically impossible,
what's
how
worse,
do we pay
a Guatemalan or an El Salvador?
A lot of my friends here up on stage will say Guatemalan. That's the easy
and I think
answer.
We've got to build our way out of this.
I've been telling people about how dirty and dangerous the El Salvadors are since I came to Congress in the 90s when they were. This guy was pretending they were human.
Why don't we
diarrhea eating a pupusa once? That was it for me.
Why don't we ever talk about the Ecuadorians? That's what I want.
With the Democratic Party. We are not connecting to the working class people in the very states that I represent, in Ohio, in the industrial Midwest. We've lost all connection. That we have got to change the center of gravity of the Democratic Party from being coastal and elitist, Ivy League, which is the perception.
Sorry, I was pretty elitist of me.
That
was elitist of me to laugh at that. I apologize.
Exactly. Behind for the last 30 years to get those workers back on our side, so we can say we're going to build electric vehicles, we're going to build solar panels. But if you want to beat Mitch McConnell, this better be a working class party. If you want to go into Kentucky and take his rear end out, and if you want to take Lindsey Graham out, you got to have a blue collar party that can go into the textile communities in South Carolina. So
interesting few choices of guys and reference.
Marion Williamson with the shade. I need to learn Spanish by tomorrow night.
Working class people. None of this is going to get done, Chuck. Thank you very much. We're going to keep moving. Congressman DeLay, I'm going to get to you.
This is I introduced the only
bipartisan. Dude, shut the fuck up. No, now I'm mad. Honestly,
DeLay
should not speak twice as much.
Right.
That is
ridiculous. Works. You just have to do
can
it
we
right.
all come
you
together and say John Delaney should not speak?
Yeah, just shut up.
Hey, everybody, hashtag shut up Delaney.
All right, I'm on it.
Carbon, give a dividend back to the American people. It goes out one pocket, back in the other.
Thank you, Congressman.
I can get that passed my first year as president with a coalition of every Democrat
You're
in the
lying.
Congress and the Republicans who live in coastal states.
And by the way, when Republicans accept climate science, it's going to be an engine for fascism, literally.
This has got to be our way forward.
So it's doubly offensive to Pablo.
Congressman Gabbard,
DeLaney's motto is if we're actually serious.
Apology.
2020.
Community about your past stances and statements on gay rights.
That's good.
After the Trump administration's rollbacks of civil rights protections for many in that community, why should voters in that community or voters
that is
care
weird.
About
why
this
is she the only
general,
one who gets a question?
Trust
like
you now.
Let me say that there is no one in our government at any level who has the right to tell any American who they should be allowed to love or who they should be allowed to marry. My record in Congress for over 6 years shows my commitment to fighting for LGBTQ equality. I serve on the Equality Caucus and recently voted for passage of the Equality Act. Maybe many people in this country can relate to the fact that I grew up in a socially conservative home, held views when I was very young that I no longer hold today.
I think that's a fair
answer. That's a totally fair answer.
Both in training and deployed downrange. I know that they would give their life for me, and I would give my life for them. It is this commitment that I'll carry through as President of the United States, recognizing that there are still people who are facing discrimination in the workplace, still people who are unable to find a home for their families. It is this kind of discrimination that we need to address.
Very good answer. Yeah. Nobody else got a question.
It's very important. 30 seconds, not enough. Look. Civil rights is some place to begin, but in the African-American civil rights community, another place to focus on was to stop the lynching of African-Americans. We do not talk enough about trans-Americans, especially African-American trans-Americans, and the incredibly high rates of murder right now.
There's been a tremendous amount
of how many children, about 30%
Dallas,
of LGBTQ kids,
five in
do
2 years,
go to school because of fear.
Trans,
it's not enough just to be on the Equality Act. I'm an original co-sponsor.
Trans woman died at Rikers.
A president that will fight
held there for a couple months for
LGBTQ Americans
seemingly nothing.
Every single day from violence.
Thank you, Senator Booker.
On the issue of civil rights, for decades, on the issue of civil rights and demographics, honestly, and politics, for decades, the Democratic Party has counted on African American.
We just passed Pod Save America.
Nice.
This is going to help my Bumble rating.
I beat Pod Save. You listen to Pod Save. I beat Pod Save. I beat it.
Did
you see?
Going to the polls for you if you're your party's nominee.
My life and my career and my work in the Senate.
Stop asking Amy Klobuchar.
Down goes Tommy Vitor.
Stop asking Amy Klobuchar questions.
For
Jesus
everyone in this country.
Christ.
And when you want to have an economy that works, you need to have retirement.
You know, the problem
that
Klobuchar has and others is that there's just nowhere for them to go. They're basically saying, I'm brave enough to offer you less. I'm willing to negotiate against ourselves. I mean, because all of their arguments
could
Delaney Klobuchar,
so to me,
in terms of their pulling back on stuff, Beto won't cop to some of the things that he won't go to in terms of like rolling back that provision that criminalizes people who cross the country. But the problem they have is they're simply saying, I'm a more practical choice. I'm willing to negotiate against myself on day one.
We will work
I agree with everybody up here in terms of the goals and where we should be, but I have a pre-negotiated position that may or may not have a better shot of actually being implemented, and probably not because we know how unreasonable the Republicans are. I mean, there's no room for them in the party anymore. This is the only way for people. This is the only way forward.
I don't know if this metaphorically illustrates the point, but there are people on the Pod Save chat now saying, go watch the Majority Report.
I was going to say, should we post as this? But it sounds like everyone's doing it for us.
Such pests. I love it. All right. Hashtag shut up, Delaney. Hashtag stop asking Klobuchar questions.
He murdered 9 people who were worshiping, and then he was apprehended by police without incident. Well, but what about Eric Garner and Tamir Rice and Lacombe McDonald and Sandra Bland and Pamela Turner and Antonio Arce? I'm proud that I'm the only candidate so far that has put forward legislation that would reform our policing system in America and make sure that no matter what the color of your skin is, that you're treated the same, including Latinos who are mistreated too oftentimes by police.
Secretary Castro, thank you.
Let me go over to Lester Holt, who's got a question, I believe, a viewer question.
And I'm over here, Chuck. Thanks. We ask voters from across the country to submit their questions to the candidates. Let me read one now. This comes from
What do you think about Dave Rubin being shadow banned?
Hey, this is
Dave. Does the United States have a responsibility to protect, in the case of genocide or crimes against humanity, do we have a responsibility to intervene to protect people threatened by their governments, even when atrocities do not affect American core interests? I'd like to direct that question to Congressman O'Rourke.
De Estada, De Ola.
The answer is yes, but that action should always be undertaken with allies and partners and friends. When the United States presents a united front, we have a much better chance of achieving our foreign policy aims and preventing the kind of genocide to which you refer, the kind of genocide that we saw in Rwanda, the kind of genocide we want to stop going forward. But unfortunately, under this administration, President Trump has alienated
This is actually a very legitimate question.
It's an interesting question.
It's a difficult question. I mean, I can tell you, for me, how I would answer this, or I certainly can tell you how I would have answered it 5 years ago, which is you have the UN must determine that we have crossed that threshold. That I do believe in American intervention and frankly, international intervention, if there is an imminent threat of genocide. The question is, how do you determine that? And prior to the Libyan invasion, essentially, assault, my answer was, the UN makes that determination because...
I want to see what he's saying.
Painful lessons as Americans that we've gone to war without congressional authorization. And look, this is very personal for me. I know the cost of war. My dad served in the Pacific in World War II in the U.S. Army. Battle of Okinawa, had half his leg blown off, and he came home with scars, both physical and emotional, and he did not recover. He spiraled downward, and he ultimately took his own life. And that battle didn't kill him, but that war did. And look, even in the humanitarian crisis, and I think we should be ready, Congressman, to intervene. God forbid there is a genocide, but not without congressional approval. Democrats and Republicans, both in the Congress, have not challenged presidents and have let them get away with running the military without the congressional approval. We learned a lesson in Vietnam we seem to have forgotten. And the decisions have to be made by the United States.
This is true. I mean, you got to read Daniel Bissner, I think. I think it's a major question in the Democratic Party of moving beyond the delusions of so-called humanitarian intervention without simply replicating isolationism. And again, I know that Sanders with Matt Duss is well ahead of the curve on trying to at least think about these things.
No one else even has... The Democratic Party is so far behind... the curve in terms of like contemplating these questions.
Totally. And this Barbara Lee should be leading on things like the AUMF.
12 of those years I've sat on the Armed Services Committee, either the Defense Appropriations Committee or the Armed Services Committee. And the lesson that I've learned over the years is that you have to stay engaged in these situations. Nobody likes it. It's long. It's tedious. But right now we have, so I would say we must be engaged in this. We must have our State Department engaged. We must have our military engaged.
I mean, these are questions that the Democratic Party have basically punted on for years.
This president doesn't even have people appointed in the State Department to deal with these
questions on immigration. They have been basically cowed and backed into positions without articulating one that is not
because these flare-ups
framed
distract us from the real
as a
the
variant of the Republican position.
Right.
Shot down
that's exactly
for $130
right.
$130 million because the president is distracted. That's $130 million that we could be
but
spending
need
in
to,
places
you know,
like
you
Youngstown,
need to get
Ohio,
away
Flint, Michigan, or rebuilding.
Congresswoman
or
Gabbard,
rebuilding.
I'm going to give you 30 seconds, actually, to
is
jump off what he said. He described engagement as the problem.
Is that what you will tell the parents of those two soldiers who were just killed in Afghanistan? Well, we just have to be engaged.
Right.
As a soldier, I will tell you, that answer is unacceptable. We have to bring our troops home from Afghanistan. We are in a place in Afghanistan where we have lost so many lives. We've spent so much money, money that's coming out of every one of our pockets, money that should be going into communities here at home, meeting the needs of the people here at home. We are no better off in Afghanistan today than we were when this war began. This is why it's so important to have a president and commander-in-chief who knows the cost of war and who's ready to do the job on day one. I am ready to do that job when I walk into the Oval Office.
I like that answer. I don't like the idea that we need to have someone who is a military person.
I know. Well, that's always, yeah.
That's always her thing.
That's always the problem. Her and de Blasio brought something to the table there that nobody else had.
I
would just say, good answers from those two.
I don't want to be engaged. I wish we were spending all this money in places that I've represented that have been completely forgotten and we were rebuilding. But the reality of it is, if the United States isn't engaged, the Taliban will grow.
And oh, they get the fuck out of here. We're negotiating with the Taliban right now, you fear-mongering 2001 ass.
Well, I think it's, to be fair, I think it's, I think he's ignorant.
Okay.
I don't think he has.
He's on the Armed Services Committee.
And thinking that we're going to somehow squash this Taliban that has been there, that every other country that's tried has failed.
I didn't say squash them. When we weren't in there, they started flying planes into our buildings.
No, they didn't. I'm just saying right now. That was Al-Qaeda.
The Taliban didn't
attack us on 9/11. Al-Qaeda did.
Right, thank you.
Al-Qaeda attacked us on 9/11.
I understand.
That's why I and so many people...
But I meant they, as in the brown guys.
Not the Taliban.
The Taliban was protecting those people who were plotting against us. All I'm saying is, if we want to go in
because
to
of the last war, that
right.
One thing you never want to say is all I'm saying
President
is
Trump right. Is saying. We okay. Can't. I would love
you know
for
who's
us
protecting
to
protecting Al Qaeda right now. I want to go down Saudi Arabia.
I want to go down right. The line here. Finish up foreign policy. It's a simple question. What is the biggest threat to who is the geopolitical threat to the United States?
Donald
one
Trump.
Answer, Congressman Delaney.
Donald Trump. United States.
Could you repeat the
greatest geopolitical threat to the United States right now?
Socialists.
Well, the biggest geopolitical challenge is China, but the biggest geopolitical threat remains nuclear weapons.
Okay.
Right? So those are different questions.
Totally get it. Go ahead, Governor Inslee.
The biggest threat to the security of the United States is Donald Trump.
And there's boom.
Good for him.
I'm good.
You take your shot.
Greatest geopolitical threat.
The greatest threat that we face is the fact that we are at a greater risk of nuclear war today than ever before in history.
Senator,
two economic threat, China, but our major threat right now is what's going on in the Mideast with Iran. If we don't get
slimmer than what we've been going here. One or two words.
Our existential threat is climate change. We have to confront it before it's too late.
But I will not commit to not taking money from the oil industry.
He's 100% climate change.
Secretary Castro.
China and climate change.
Congressman Ryan.
China, without a question, they're wiping us around the world economically.
Russia, because they're trying to undermine our democracy, and they've been doing a pretty damn good job.
What
did he say?
Russia. What did Warren say?
For that wide variety
climate
of
change?
Okay,
no,
climate
I mean
change.
That. No, I mean that in a, that's what this debate is about. This is the best
part Bill,
of,
don't
of
do
a
that.
Like this.
Yeah, de Blasio, you were doing so much
so
for President.
Great.
Court
he was doing
outlines
so great.
Multiple instances of potential criminal behavior by President Trump.
Yeah.
House Speaker Pelosi has publicly and privately resisted any move toward impeachment in the House.
Boring.
If the
channel.
House chooses not to impeach.
Boring stuff.
As president, would you do anything to address the potential crimes
Sad
that were
Chuck.
Outlined in Mr. Mueller's report?
Yes.
This is boring.
I'll tell you why.
Okay, here we go.
How, by the way, if the answer is yes.
One of the most powerful pieces of art in the United States Capitol is the Trumbull painting of General George Washington resigning his commission to the Continental Congress.
Cincinnati.
At the height of his power, submitting to the rule of law and the will of people. That has withstood the test of time for the last 243 years. If we set another precedent now that a candidate who invited the participation of a foreign power, a president who sought to obstruct the investigation into the invasion of our democracy, if we allow him to get away with this with complete impunity, then we will have set a new standard, and that is that some people, because of the position of power and public trust that they hold, are above the law. And we cannot allow that to stand. So we must begin impeachment now so that we have the facts and the truth and we follow them as far as they go and as high up as they reach and we save this democracy. And if we've not been able to do that in this year or the year that follows, and under my administration, our Department of Justice will pursue these facts and ensure that there are consequences, there is accountability, and there is justice. It's the only way that we save this country.
Thank you, Congressman O'Rourke.
Because of the accountability issues that Congressman O'Rourke was just describing there and the real political landscape in which Nancy Pelosi is saying that impeachment will not be pursued in the House, it raises the prospect, and the Mueller report raises the prospect, that President Trump could be prosecuted for some of those potential crimes down the line.
No U.S. president has ever been prosecuted for crimes after leaving office. Do you believe that President Trump could or should be the first?
I guess there's always a first.
Should he be the first?
I don't think anyone's above the law. I don't think anyone is above the law. I'm just going to president. I support.
I'm
going to
just name a couple of general principles instead of answering the question.
Why does I think she knows
gravity exist?
The decision as to whether to impeach the president than any of the 2020
even more importantly,
combined.
Why doesn't he just answer something?
So, but I do think,
like, what's the fucking?
You're going to get the most 200 votes. Everybody hates you. You could just say what you think.
But I will tell you, Rachel,
does John Delaney actually think he's going to fucking win?
Much campaigning as I've done.
Like, I don't want to risk saying something wrong.
I don't want to risk falling from 300 votes to 50 votes.
It's not. They want to know what we're going to do for health care, how we're going to lower pharmaceutical prices, how we're going to build infrastructure, what we're going to do to create jobs in their communities. You know, last year in our country, 80% of the money for startup businesses went to 50 counties in this country. There's over 3,000 counties in this country. That's what they care about. They care about what's going on in the public schools. They care about what's
antitrust,
going on in the jobs in their communities.
Why are you not deferring to Warren?
With their health care, with infrastructure. These are the issues. These kind of kitchen table, pocketbook issues are actually what most Americans care about.
Who cares about you, dude?
They want to know how we're going to solve these problems.
Time, sir.
Here's the thing. I still, Senator,
we let the Republicans run our elections.
We got to.
And if we do not do something.
I get out of the debates. No more Klobuchar and Delaney. Get the fuck out.
So we're not going to get what we want to do.
All right, I got to sneak in. We blew through a break, which is good news. To give you more time, so I got to sneak one in now. More of this debate.
Well, then you're not really blowing
it
through
continues
the,
right
after the break, are you?
They got an extra one with that sound F up.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I got to say, I'm enjoying this debate. I mean, I think it's pretty good. It's better than I would have anticipated. De Blasio, I thought, was doing a great job, but then he just...
You know, I got to say.
Strategic fail.
You know, that I don't know about. Because for what it's worth, as much as I am, you know, exhausted by and skeptical of and repulsed by much of the Russia obsession. A fair amount of people tuning into MSNBC, it's an easy applause.
I get that. But it's just like, why?
He could have done something.
He doesn't need to do that.
Yeah, and I think also because
he doesn't need to do it, and also because
he's actually been landing serious and substantive points.
Absolutely,
and it makes him just
that's
look
my
cheap.
Point. Let me just say this.
Yeah,
and I want to say to the people out there who are fans of John Delaney,
John Delaney's family who may be watching this live,
and, or frankly Bill de Blasio, they're not going to win. They're not going to win. Now de Blasio, I actually think, is gaining. In he's not going to gain points in the. It doesn't matter.
No, he's regenerating Bill de Blasio, his national stature. If it goes like this,
de Blasio is building
a media narrative.
Something.
Yeah,
Delaney is basically like, you know, if Delaney wasn't already a millionaire, I would say, good for you. You're setting yourself up. You're indicating to industry out there that you are the guy to go to, who appears to have access to the body politic, and you're clearly going to carry their message, so go pay me. But he's already wealthy. Now,
Right. Now
I don't understand that mentality. He may want more money, and he perceives it as a way of going that way.
He wants to run for president.
Huh?
He wants to run for president.
No, I know he wants to run for president. He's not going to win.
I
mean, I
think
like,
but
no, I
think there's a Howard
if you're John Delaney,
streak. I think
if you're John
delusional.
Delaney and you think you're going to win for president. Now, I also don't know how John Delaney would think, like, I'm going to be VP, but he may think, if Biden wins, I could be Commerce Secretary or something. Is there any more of that pizza left? Anybody? Anybody want that slice?
You can go for it.
I will take it. I will take it just to celebrate the fact that apparently I have just been informed by our social media person that, A, we have over 1,000 more viewers on our feed than Pod Save America, and B, our audience are relentless.
Yeah,
trolling anybody.
I kind of regret maybe putting that out there. It's still going on.
I feel like I need to.
Yeah, why not?
Call off the dogs or something.
I didn't call any dogs on. I didn't say go into their feed.
Yes, you did.
No, I did not.
You say, you go after Podsafe. If it's good enough for Door, it's good enough for...
Wait.
I don't even know.
Are we beating Chapo, too?
Don't act like you're surprised. In the swamp. We're turning over the tables in the swamp.
The fun and games have begun.
Each candidate has 45 seconds. We want to.
Why do they
get
to bring everybody up there? We need to have five.
Ugh.
Closing now?
Closing.
Okay, 45 seconds.
Closing time.
We can go on.
Right, closing time. How about another round?
We are on a mission.
We're on a mission
to find the America that's been lost through infighting, through inaction.
God.
We're so much better than this. We're a country that used to do things. We saved the world. We created the American dream for millions of people like myself, the grandson of immigrants, the son of a union electrician who went on to become a successful business leader.
Jesus Christ, it's John Delaney.
Jobs. But we did these things with real solutions, not with impossible promises. And those are the
I don't want to get tagged.
To get back to. I'm running for president to solve these problems, to build infrastructure, to fix our broken healthcare system, to invest in communities that have been left behind, to improve public education. I just don't want to be your president to be your president.
Hold on.
I want to be your president to do the job. This is not about me. This is about getting America working again. Thank you.
Mayor, your closing statement.
Well,
it matters. It matters in this fight for the heart and soul of our party that we nominate a candidate who has seen the face of poverty and didn't just talk about it, but gave people $15 minimum wage. It matters that we nominate a candidate who saw the destruction wrought by a broken health care system and gave people universal health care. It matters that we choose someone who saw the wasted potential of our children denied pre-K and gave it to every single one of them for free. These things really matter. And these are the things that I've done in New York, and I want to do the same for this whole country. Because putting working people first, it matters. We need to be that party again. Let's work together. With your help, we can put working people first again in America.
Thank you, Mayor de Blasio. Right on time.
Good for him.
Wow, he even kept the time right.
Trudy and I have three grandchildren. We love them all. And when I was thinking about whether to run for president, I made a decision. I decided that on my last day on Earth, I wanted to look them in the eye and tell them I did everything humanly possible to protect them from the ravages of the climate crisis. And I know to a moral certainty, if we do not have the next president who commits to this as the top priority, it won't get done. And I am the only candidate, frankly, I'm surprised. I am the only candidate who's made this commitment to make it the top priority. If you join me in that recognition of how important this is, we can have a unified national mission. We can save ourselves. We can save our children. We can save our grandchildren. And we can save literally the life on this planet. This is our moment.
Governor, thank you. Congressman Ryan, you're 45 seconds.
Good. Good answer.
There's nothing worse than not being heard.
And not knowing the difference between the Taliban and Al Qaeda.
I know that because I've represented for 17 years in Congress a forgotten community. They've tried to divide us, who's white, who's black, who's gay, who's straight, who's a man, who's a woman.
Stop stealing my lines, white boy.
And they ran away with all the gold because they divided the working class. It's time for us to come together. I don't know how you feel, but I'm ready to play some offense. I come from the middle of industrial America, but these problems are all over our country. There's a tent city in L.A. There's homeless people and people around our country who can't afford a home. It's time for us to get back on track.
Really did half
the teacher in Texas, the nurse in New Hampshire, the waitress in Wisconsin, all of us coming together, playing offense with an agenda that lifts everybody up.
The teacher in Louisiana,
playing offense with an agenda.
When I walk into that Oval Office every morning, you will not be forgotten.
Thank you.
Your voice will be heard. Thank you.
Apparently, it's the bots that are moving people from crooked to
our nation was founded on the principles of service above self.
Who's saying this?
People who fled kings, who literally prospered on the backs and the sacrifices of people coming here to this country, instead putting in place a government that is of, by, and for the people. But that's not what we have. Instead, we have a government that is of, by, and for the rich and powerful. This must end. As president, our White House will be a beacon of light, providing hope and opportunity, ushering in a new century.
A lighthouse.
Where every single person will be able to get the health care they need, where we will have clean air to breathe and clean water to drink, where we will have good-paying jobs in a new green economy. Join me in ushering in this new century with peace, prosperity, opportunity, and justice for all.
Congresswoman, thank Solid. You.
Secretary Castro, you have 45 seconds, sir.
Me llamo Julian Castro, y estoy postulando por presidente de los Estados Unidos.
Boring.
The very fact that I can say that tonight shows the progress that we have made in this country.
So boring.
Like many of you, I know the promise of America.
Real shame the Democrats had to speak Spanish tonight.
And just two generations later, one
they
of her
grandsons problem,
is serving in the United
but they
States
have the
Congress,
wrong solution.
And the other one is running for president of the United States. If I'm elected president, I will work hard every single day so that you and your family can get good health care, your child can get a good education, and that you can have good job opportunities, whether you live in a big city or a small town. And on January 20th, 2021, we'll say adios to Donald Trump.
It is a fact, and you will not deny it.
Three things to know about me.
Shut up.
I listen to people, and that's how I get things done. That is my focus. I have a track
record. Wait, I want to hear the other one.
Over 100 bills where I'm the lead Democrat, and that is because I listened and I acted. And I think that's important in a president. Everything else just
that you can listen
away.
To other people talking.
Secondly,
yeah.
I'm someone
Even
that
I
can win
that.
And beat Donald
I'm
Trump.
A clinical
I have won
narcissistic
every place,
psychopath.
Every race, and every time. I have won in the reddest of districts, ones that Donald Trump won by over 20 points. I can win in states like Wisconsin and Iowa and in Michigan. And finally, yeah, I am not the establishment party candidate. I've got respect, but I'm not that person. I am the one that doesn't have a political machine that doesn't come from money. And I don't make all the promises that everyone up here makes. But I can promise you this. I am going to govern with integrity. I'm going to have your back. And I'm going to govern for you. Thank you, Senator.
You're not of the establishment.
50 years ago this month, my family moved into the town I grew up in because after being denied a house because of the color of their skin, it was activists, mostly white activists, that stood up and fought for them.
Harrington
That's
Park,
the best
New Jersey.
Of who we are as America. And why, when I got out of law school, I moved into the inner city of Newark to fight as a tenant lawyer for other people's rights.
To fight for
I've taken
funds,
on bullies
to destroy the education
and beat
system.
Them. I've taken on tough fights, and we've won. And we win those fights not by showing the worst of who we are, but rising to who's best. Donald Trump wants us to fight him on his turf and his terms. We will beat him. I will beat him by calling this country to a sense of common purpose again. This is a referendum on him and getting rid of him, but it's also a referendum on us, who we are and who we must be to each other. It's time we win this election. And the way I'll govern is by showing the best of who we are, because that's what this country needs
Senator,
and deserves.
Thank you.
Congressman O'Rourke, 45 seconds. Our daughter Molly turned 11 this week. I'm on this stage for her, for children across this country, including some her same age who've been separated from their parents and are sleeping on concrete floors under aluminum blankets tonight. If we're going to be there for them, if we're going to confront the challenges that we face, we can't return to the same old approach. We're going to need a new kind of politics, one directed by the urgency of the next generation. Those climate activists who are fighting not just for their future, but for everyone's. Those students marching not just for their lives, but for all of us. We'll need a movement like the one that we led in Texas. It renewed our democracy by bringing everyone in and writing nobody off. That's how we beat Donald Trump. That's how we bring this great country together again. Join us. This is our moment, and the generations that follow are counting on us to meet it.
Thank you, Congressman.
Seconds for the final statement of the evening.
Thank you. It's a great honor to be here. Never in a million years did I think I would stand on a stage like this. I was born and raised in Oklahoma. I have three older brothers. They all joined the military. I had a dream growing up, and my dream was to be a public school teacher. By the time I graduated from high school, My family. My family didn't have the money for a college application, much less a chance for me to go to college. But I got my chance. It was a $50 a semester commuter college. That was a little slice of government that created some opportunity for a girl. And it opened my life. I am in this fight because I believe that we can make our government, we can make our economy, we can make our country work, not just for those at the top. We can make it work for everyone. And I promise you this, I will fight for you as hard as I fight for my own family.
We would like to thank all of the candidates who participated with us tonight, and that will do it for night one of this two-night event. And guess what? We've got 10 more candidates tomorrow night.
We certainly hope you will join us.
You fucking do.
For now, that concludes
make
our
way for the king.
Say goodbye to these guys.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there.
You have a wonderful day, bro, and I'll see you again soon.
Shifted it.